Okay, good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the regular meeting for November 10th, 2015. The time right now is 7:21. We just ended a special meeting of the City Council about 10 minutes ago and therefore starting this meeting a little bit late. Ms. Smith, will you call the roll, please?
Certainly, council members present and establishing a quorum are Hanford, Cutaback, Rasmussen, Camp, Davis, and Garrett.
Thank you. And we had received word that Councilmember Gamble would not be able to make it this evening, so unless there's a disagreement, we will consider him excused this evening. Councilmember Hanford, will you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? Thank you.
Please rise. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The first item that we have on this evening's agenda is a public hearing. This is AB 15-194, the 2016 budget, first public hearing. Ms. Nelson.
This is an opportunity for the public to say anything that they would like to regarding the preliminary budget for 2016. The budget does not include contain any property tax increases. We had two presentations on the budget in October, and this is just for council to receive input if any from the public.
Okay. Do we have anybody that has signed up to speak?
Yes.
Okay.
Budget.
On the budget, yes. Thank you. Okay, so this is the public hearing for the budget, and the first person that we have signed up to speak is Mr. Lowell Anderson. Mr. Anderson.
Are you planning to speak on this issue? I'd rather
there will be an opportunity for public comment.
Yes.
Okay. So his comment is for public comment, so we'll come back to that. The next person for public hearing is Mr. Scott Fuhrer.
Public comment also.
Public comment. Okay. Vicki Fuhrer, same?
Same, thank you.
Okay. Jackie, and I'm sorry, is it?
Legassi,
same. Okay. And Mr. Scott Stickney?
Public comment, please.
Public comment, okay. All right. Is there anybody here that would like to speak to the public hearing on the budget for next year? Okay, seeing none, Councilmember Hanford.
Move to close the citizen testimony portion of the public hearing.
Second.
Thank you. I have a first from Councilmember Hanford. I have a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion to close the public hearing? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
And to clarify, that is to close the citizen testimony portion of the public hearing. Any opposed? Seeing none, the motion passes 6-0. Councilmember Hanford?
Yes, I'll move to close the public hearing.
Second.
Thought I'd give you an opportunity.
Okay, so I have a first from Councilmember Hanford. I have a second from Councilmember Camp to close the public hearing.
Thank you.
Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much. We'll now move on to the next item on the agenda. This is under announcements and presentations. This evening we have the Monroe Historical Society here to present. Ms. Kinney.
It's a big crowd.
I'm a little nervous here.
You were saying something about memberships.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome. Happy audience. All right.
Everybody can hear me? All right? Okay. Well, good evening. My name is Tammy Kinney. I am president of the Monroe Historical Society. We're very happy to be here tonight to let you know a little bit about our organization and some of the activities and contributions we make to the community, as well as answer any questions you might have. I've prepared a slideshow for tonight. So we'll begin with that. The Monroe Historical Society was created in 1976 as part of the nation's bicentennial that year. We have a charter member, Marg Olson, who still serves on our board today, and I'll be introducing some of our board members who are here this evening. Our mission statement and purpose is to inspire learning about local history through exhibits and programs and publishing stories of the Monroe region. We also preserve history by collecting and preserving artifacts, oral and written histories, and preserving historic buildings like you see there, our 1908 City Hall building. So I hope all of you have had a chance to pop into our museum over the years. If not, consider yourself invited. The museum has been open since 1982. It's located in the City Hall building and is free to the public. The exhibit you see here is about early Monroe and the first settlement of the valley. It features a dugout canoe, if you can see that kind of at the top of the photo there, from a native tribe, a plat mat, and other artifacts. We also have a research library that we're very proud of, oral history tapes, 1,500 digitized images, and local historians who are available during museum hours to answer questions. At this point, I would like to introduce our board members and officers who are here tonight. If you could please stand when I call your name. Obviously, I am president. Our vice president is Wally Armstrong, who also is very active in the Lions Club and a Monroe native. Deb Larson, many of you know her. She has a CPA firm here locally, is our treasurer. And Dexter Taylor is our secretary. So Dexter is here. Please rise. Our trustees are Chris B., Gary Brooks, who is here tonight, Karen Coppernell, Gail Dillaway, Guy Fawcett, Marg Olson, please stand. Dottie Simone, Bill Wojciechowski, Bill, please stand. And Chris B. also serves as our museum director. So these folks put in a lot of hours back there doing docenting at the museum, serving as historians in their own right, and of course attending board meetings like you all attend city council meetings. Probably our most visible project in the community is hosting the Shanahan Cabin every year at the fair. Hopefully some of you have been by to see us when you're at the fair. It is one of our most exciting, fun times that we have as a group. We have a recurring group of docents that come down, and it's about a four-hour shift, and we have a great partnership with the fairgrounds. They actually provide free admission and parking for our docents, so that makes it a very popular activity. Then you're free to enjoy the fair. But we have just a lot of fun meeting people from the community. We often have visitors from all over the country. One year, I think we had 6,000 people come through and sign our guest book. And there you see Kim Love and her daughter Stephanie. They're among the many volunteer hosts each year. So if any of you would like to be docents at the cabin, please let us know. It's a lot of fun. And again, we kind of, Dexter usually schedules that, but you end up having people sort of fighting over shifts because they enjoy it so much. Every year we raffle off a quilt. This year's quilt is there on the left. It is celebrating the fruit growers of the Skykomish Valley. Ben Franklin, we have a lot of partnerships in the community, and Ben Franklin is one of them. They donate the printing of our raffle tickets each year, as well as a 15% off coupon. So it makes the tickets very popular with local shoppers. We have tickets tonight. They're $1. If any of you would like to buy some, let us know. And we also really enjoy, again, partnerships we have with local groups in the community. The East County Senior Center Queen Bee Quilters are there on the right. They contributed our quilt in 2010. We participate in the Fair Days Parade every year. There we are with our signs. That's a lot of fun. We had an 8th grade Park Place Middle School student join us this year, which was great fun. And we really, really enjoy that. You may not know that the Monroe Historical Society sponsored a farmers market in 2008. We ran it for 2 years, every Tuesday from 2 p.m. to 7. It was behind our museum on Main Street, and we had a lot of local farmers, crafters that attended, and the only reason that we weren't able to continue doing it is just the lack of volunteers. We're very happy there's a farmers market now, too. One of our many community services is providing historic photos for local businesses. As you can see here, we helped Wells Fargo Bank with their lovely mural. Les Schwab also has one. And Coastal Bank. We also have helped Adams Bistro and Monroe Laundry Company with historic photos for their businesses. One of the projects we're most proud of is our newspaper digitization project. Since 2012, we've been working on this, and we feel it's one of our most important contributions to making local history accessible to the public. It's a long and tedious project. Gary Brooks, who is sitting back there, works on it with Chris B., and it does require additional funding to keep it going. We're proud that almost 10,000 pages have been scanned and digitized so far and are now available for viewing by the public. And if you do get on the website where they are housed, look out, because you will spend hours and hours reading them. They are very addictive. We participate in a variety of community events. Here we have Joan Snow and Gib Strong, a couple of folks from the community participating in the annual tractor show in the Tuolco Valley. We also participate in Swift Night Out, tree lighting, a lot of the things that are going on. We try to be there, and we're only limited by the number of volunteers we have. We would definitely attend more of these events if we just had more volunteers. We've installed a couple of interpretive signs in the community. On the left there is the Monument to Monroe Pioneers. That's at Lewis Street Park. The Historical Society was responsible for that. And then at Sky River Park, don't know if you have been out there, there's a Centennial Pioneer Memorial Garden that actually was installed with the help of the Parks Department. And that is an interpretive sign talking about the settlement of the valley in the 1860s. Kurt Gehring's daughter is in this picture. This is a recent project that we're very, very proud of. A lot of you were at our June event at Park Place Middle School. There's a forgotten World War II monument on Kelsey Street. It's now gone, but it sat there languishing for about 64 years, and we have always wanted something done about this, and this group of eighth graders, spearheaded by teachers Dottie Simone and Tanya Boyle from Park Place Middle School, decided that they were going to not only get this monument refurbished, and there's kind of a picture of it over on the right, not a very good picture, but they were going to do research on the 18 fallen soldiers from Monroe whose names were supposed to be on this monument. This ended up just being a wonderful unifying project in the community. The American Legion, of course, is involved because they initially installed the monument in 1951. This is culminating in now a relocation of the monument to Lake Tai, and it's a fundraiser. It's going to be a great community event once it's unveiled, but it has really been a great partnership for us with the schools, American Legion, and the community to get this done. And they're hoping to unveil the new monument either Memorial Day or Veterans Day of 2016. In 2011, we had another Veterans Day celebration that we were very, very proud of. This was spearheaded by Butch Olson, Marg Olson's husband, who is a Vietnam veteran. This was a huge community event. It drew about 400 people. Kirk Pearson was our speaker. We had the Monroe High School band there, and it was down at Travelers Park. Butch is pictured here with a variety of our other board members and members who are vets, and we did a lovely Vietnam Remembered exhibit that year, and one of the wonderful results of this project was the number of veterans who shared their experiences after remaining silent for 50 years. Mm. We're very, very happy about that. Thanks to a bequest from Hiroko Haji, who is the sister of the late Tom Haji, a Monroe graduate and veteran, we have the means to award a scholarship to a Monroe High School senior each year. The funds are designated for educational purposes, and we are very proud to honor deserving students in the community. So in 2014, Rose Geiger received our scholarship, and this year, Leah Nemeth received it. School tour field trips are one of our favorite things. We've been doing these for years, and as you can see, we have kids come down, they dress up in period costume, we take them on sort of a three-pronged tour. One part is a walking tour of Main Street, where they're armed with then and now photos so they can compare and contrast. They do go through the museum and learn about our artifacts and how to handle artifacts, and then they have a sort of pioneer day upstairs where they get to dress up and pretend they're kids from the 1880s, which includes doing laundry, which you see them there with a pump and a wringer and an old-fashioned clothesline, and game time, and then they get to sit in those old school desks and be teacher and student. And we have slates for them to write on with chalk. It's free. We've often talked about how cool it would be if we could make that a birthday party type thing where people could pay and bring their kids. But again, we don't have enough people to do it. So this is just great fun, and we love doing it. The docents that are able to help us, of course, are mostly retired or they have part-time work. But if you know of anyone who's looking for something fun to do, let us know, because we are always looking for great people to work with the kids. We host a variety of free quarterly programs in the community. In this photo on the left there, you see a couple of pictures from a dirt track Sky Valley Speedway reunion we did a few years ago, which was really fun. It was at the fairgrounds. And before Evergreen Speedway, they had an old dirt track kind of up above Fred Meyer. And it was really, really a great time. We got all these folks together. Some of them brought their old cars out of storage. That's kind of illustrative of the variety of programs that we host. I'm pictured there on the right when Monroe High School had its centennial, 1911 class and 2011 class. We celebrated 100 years of high school in Monroe, and we had the valedictorian that year come and recite the valedictorian speech from 1911 and then his valedictorian speech. So it was really, really fun. A lot of attendance there. All right, hopefully you've all seen our early Monroe book. There's Dexter. Dexter's here tonight. We're very proud of this book. It was published in 2013. If you don't have a copy and you'd like to have one, I think every council member should have a copy. You can buy one online at our website, or you can buy it at our museum or from any board member. We have a lot of other pamphlets and written materials at the museum. Also shown is a walking tour that we have published that is available online. You can download it off of our website. And we also have them in the museum, and it's really fun. It's basically a self-guided tour of Main Street, and you know, you go to the assigned locale and it shows you what it looked like in 1920, 1890, and it's just really, really a fun way to while away an afternoon. Well, at 107 years old, our old city hall is showing her age. Repairs, maintenance, and utility bills consume a large portion of our budget. We enjoy sharing our stately brick building with the community, and we're trying very hard to preserve it for future generations. We're also proud to contribute to the distinctive look of historic downtown. We put a new roof on the building in 2010, new paint in 2011, and we continue ongoing repairs to keep it in good shape. Pictured there is Bill, who's here tonight, painting the old back stairs. But boy, it is an ongoing project to keep that building going. Speaking of historic structures, we have another historic structure with an unknown future here in our community. The Healy House, located at 321 Hill Street, is currently for sale. It was built in 1909 by one of Monroe's early businessmen, Bart Healy. You see him there. His daughter Minerva is beneath him. And the Healy family lived there until Minerva Healy's death in 1997. So 88 years in the same family. The home is currently zoned for multifamily housing, making it attractive to developers. It's on almost an acre. Since we do not have a historic register or some other way to protect it, the society is concerned that it might be demolished for new construction. So that would be just a huge loss to our community because we don't have very many of these old jewels left. So I've sent each of you history and background on this home via email earlier this summer. I don't know how many of you opened up your email and took a look, but there's just a lot of things we might do with it. The price is very attractive. It's $225,000. A lot of people in the community have appealed to me as the president of the Historical Society saying we've got to do something to save this house. So just food for thought there. As a nonprofit, our funding comes from donations, memberships, grants, fundraisers, and rent from two tenants in our building. Just like every other nonprofit, we could do so much more if only we had the budget and more volunteers. However, we are very proud of the things that we managed to accomplish with what we have. So with that, I would like to thank you for your time and answer any questions you might have about our organization.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kenny. Council, any questions or comments? Council Member Hanford?
Yeah, not a question, just a comment. Thank you very much for your presentation. The American Legion came and did their talk to us a couple months ago about the monument, switching that, and we're giving them all the support.
Yeah,
all the support we can. We're very excited about that, and looking forward to scheduling that grand opening day in advance enough so that we can plan for a ceremony or something like that. So I think it's very important. I know it happens to be Veterans Day tomorrow, but I think it's very important to honor those that died for our country and especially from our town. So. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else have any questions?
I think that's it. I thank you very much for coming this evening and for the service you provide to our community.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
And thank all the volunteers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, the next item that we have on the agenda this evening is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter that is subject to a public hearing. We do have a sign-in list, and because it may not have the same people. So we do have a sign-in list, and what I'll do is I'll start with those who had already signed on for the public hearing, understanding that that was for this. And if there are any duplicates, I'll take care of them as we go. So the first person that we have signed up to speak is Mr. Lowell Anderson. Mr. Anderson?
I'm his easel.
Okay.
I have a rather large document that I need help with. I'd like him to assist me. Catching the cold. Time of year. I'll get organized in just a moment. Lowell Anderson, 129 East Livermore Drive, Monroe, Washington. About the East Monroe Rezone Comprehensive Plan. Since the applicant consultant prepared the draft final SEIS, we question how much the city should rely on the EIS, given that the preparer had a financial interest in ensuring a positive outcome. Please consider this, that CEQA is an environmental full disclosure law, considers impacts that are likely not merely speculative, consider short-term and long-term effects over a lifetime of a proposal. A purpose of an EIS is to provide an impartial discussion. This is working with the experts. I started on September 7th and ended on October 8th trying to find information on this statement on page 41 of the DSEIS. It states, additional field surveying was also conducted to verify, confirm, and or refine previous surveys and LIDAR data. And I wrote a letter asking for all of that data. On September 18th, Mr. Osaki called me to contact Pace Engineering Elaine Davis, which I did because he wasn't able to obtain the information. September 28th, I received a white copy with transmittal letters of nothing but points. There isn't anyone in this room that could prove anything from this information that was submitted by Pace Engineering. 7 pages of stations, meaningless. So then I write another letter and it goes on. And finally, on October 8th, and my comments are supposed to be in on October 9th, which I couldn't make, they provided me with this piece of paper. Now, the October 8, 2015 information that I received from Pace Engineering appears to be a LIDAR map with a survey information. It is not a valid document because it does not contain the following. Horizontal datum, vertical datum, drawing compiled from, contours are LIDAR from where? No engineering stamp, no date, no legend, no project, no file, no scale. Not a valid document on Washington Mohawk requires an engineering stamp and a signature. This is your exhibit right here. Nothing. However, Pace Engineering needs to raise the ground elevation using LIDAR, then lowering the base flood elevation by 1.7 feet in order to utilize all 10.17 acres. And I read Mr. Watershed's report, and he hasn't got it approved yet, and he won't. The Watershed Science and Engineering Hydraulic Study, the WSE flood rise data, is not based on valid documentation. From what I can see, it's based on this non-valid drawing, which means they have absolutely nothing. There are too many questions to ask. However, the study was additionally based on an assumption that field investigations further confirmed that there does not appear, now that's a real statement, does not appear to be any culvert under the railroad tracks or the upstream end of the slough between the slough and the Skycomish River. Pace Engineering would have us believe that the fill under the railroad tracks are protected with an armor plate and flood-proof for verification with Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad. Provide the evidence. There isn't any. for ecology letter, it's their understanding that the railroad base is composed of relatively porous riprap that does have a hydraulic connection with the river during high flows. Lots of questions, no answers. Now, which 100-year flood is WSE study based on? We have one about every 6 years. Now, there's been many changes have taken place to the large farm, bordering the west and south side of the river, affecting flood flow, making this study even more suspicious. Misleading information by the city. Figure 9, and this really galled me, figure 9. This thing states, even when flood waters reach the elevation, the conceptual developable area remained above water. See city photograph. The city has provided photographs of the property being dry. Now, if there's anyone in this room believes that that's true, we provide the amount of the benefit evidence that contradicts this. This really fries my bacon. Information provided by the city that's totally erroneous. Here is a picture of the site. My cover letter that shows it completely underwater. So the misinformation provided by the city is a hot button for me. Further information provided by the city was referenced of October 25th to Mr. Kurosaki correcting his misinformation of the property not being farmed. Now this is not a major issue, but it's a minor issue, and it's important to me. The property was farmed in 2009 with a canola crop. Huge flocks of trumpeter swans, a protected species, ruined the crop and required a letter be written so that the farmer would be compensated for his loss.
Mr. Anderson, I need to ask you to wrap up.
One more sentence. Because the applicant consultant prepared the draft final SEIS, we questioned how much the city should rely on the FEIS, that the preparer had a financial interest in assuring for a positive outcome. Please vote to deny it. Thank you for your time. I'm submitting this information as a record.
Thank you. The next person that I have who signed up to speak is Mr. Scott Furrier. Mr. Scott?
Here, we get it together.
Thank you.
Sorry, sir, I'll be out of here in a second. I got more paper than I know what to do. This is the non-valid document, and the rest of the information is cover letter.
Thank you.
My name is Scott Furr, and I live at 23811 State Route 2, Monroe. I'm opposed to the rezone for a lot of reasons. First off, it would create an island of commercial property that would not be contiguous to any other commercial property in Monroe. I think Woods Creek makes a natural boundary for the city of Monroe. It's been historically farmland. I have a 56-acre farm right on Highway 2 that's just east of that property by a mile or so. So that's the emotional part of it. The other issue I have, of course, is with the EIS. This is an excerpt from the environmental impact statement. And if you look at it right here, we've got what appears to be a waterway running up to the railroad tracks there, continues on the other side, and then there's this 3-foot culvert that passes under Highway 2, and the assertion is in the EIS that there is no culvert or channel going underneath the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad tracks. Now, if you contact Burlington Northern, as I have, they won't deny or admit that there is a culvert there, but I'm in contact currently with Katrina Salazar in Fort Worth, Texas, that's researching that. And you know, when I looked at this, I said, well, you know, it's obviously there's some sort of waterway underneath the railroad tracks. I mean, you look at the LIDAR scan, and you can, it's a little obscured because this bubble note is placed over a critical area there, but it appears to me as though there is a culvert there. So what I did was I went down and to the culvert right there where it crosses the road, and I took my tape measure, and of course I measured the 3-foot culvert that's in the report that goes under Highway 2, and it's actually a 4-foot diameter culvert. So right now I'm standing on the south side of Highway 2 looking south at the Burlington Northern Railroad tracks, and you can see the standing water here. Now if you drive down the highway, this is the only piece on the railroad tracks with this large outcropping of rocks here, and these are big rocks there. It doesn't have the normal railroad ballast. It's obviously been there to protect something. So then, if you go up on top of the railroad tracks and you look south, this is the waterway that appears there. So, I mean, you can see it looks like a natural waterway, and there's obviously been flow there. So I thought, well, I'll look around, see what I can find. So I went down there. I had a shovel, and I took an 8-foot rod. And standing on this is just, it's a peat bog, and you're standing on top of the reed canary grass. And I could actually push it down 6 feet just with one hand. Well, I did find a little area here that is, oops, this one is upside down. So, but anyways, so this is a little retaining wall right here made out of railroad ties. And below that, as I was probing around, I found something solid at about 18 inches. And so I probed around, and it was a large object, and it was all at the same surface. And I dug it up, and it appears to be concrete. When I penetrated the edge of it, water just started boiling out like I had burst the dam. So again, I contacted Burlington Northern Santa Fe, and they're going to send somebody out there. Katrina is looking at the maps now to see what she can find. If she can't find anything, they'll send somebody out to investigate it. I did also talk to Cecil Wrench, who is with the Washington State Department of Transportation, regarding the 4-foot culvert. And there's only 8 inches of free flow through that 4-foot culvert right now. And he said they always assumed behind those large rock outcroppings that there was a culvert that tied that waterway together. And I feel there is, although I wasn't able to find it, but I think with a little more research we can find it.
Mr. Furrow, I'll need to ask you to wrap up. That's your 5 minutes.
Well, the only thing I'd like to say is, you know, when Pastor Minnick was closing at the Planning Commission's hearing, he said that this decision should be based on science and not emotion. You know, this is my town, this is my county, and I'm emotional about it, as everybody else is. So if we're going to base it on science, I think it should be good science and not flawed science. I don't think they've done due diligence in doing their research to determine what is or isn't there.
I do need to ask.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. The next person that we have who signed up to speak is Ms. Vicki Furr. Please step forward and state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Vicki Furr, address is 23811 SR2, Monroe, Washington.
For
I said, my name is Vicki. I've lived just east of this proposed rezone for the past 57 years. I'm strongly opposed to the rezone of this parcel east of Monroe to commercial. Historically, along Highway 2 and the Scenic Byway, the land has been agricultural. We can boast that the soil in this area is some of the best and most fertile soil in all of Snohomish County. There's also a natural boundary as you come out of the town of Monroe. You've got Woods Creek, you've got the hill, and you drop in basically into the county, into farmland. And not just us locals, but people from Seattle, I've heard them say that too. You drive, you hit that little incline of Monroe, you've left all the chaos of life behind you, and you're out in the country. And I think not only people feel that way, but I think the animals and the wildlife feel that way too. This rezone is not compatible or consistent with any of the neighboring land uses. The majority of the properties all the way from Monroe all the way to Sultan are involved in agriculture, and many of the people make their living in agriculture. And I can list off from Monroe to Sultan, there's bamboo land, which is agriculture. There's a nursery, Pine Creek Nursery. There's also a sod farm. There's beans being raised. There's vegetables and flowers. There's beef ranches. There's a dairy farm. There's horse boarding facilities. There's horse breeding facilities. There's pasture land. There's corn being raised for cattle silage. And there's also hay being raised. Those of us that are those people that don't make their living in agriculture are still trying to live the country life. Most everyone has a couple cattle for their own uses for beef, or they have a few horses. But most everybody lives on the property that they own, except that immediate property coming out of Monroe. So the rest of us landowners, you know, are trying to keep and instill the country and keep it zoned agricultural tenor open space. This land was purchased as open space, and it's frustrating for all of us farmers and longtime property owners, as we aren't the ones trying to rezone. We're the ones trying to hold on to our roots and hold on to the agricultural industry. In the last 10 years, agriculture and small farms are growing in Snohomish County and in Washington State. Farms exactly the same acreage as this property. So to decrease that is also decreasing in income and the potential for the industry that is actually growing in the area. Once this land has been paved over, it's too expensive to undo. Not only does it decrease the productivity from farmland, but it also impacts wildlife in the area. With the wetlands that are on this property and water and wetlands and grounds, there's abundance of wildlife from elk and deer down to small salamanders. And I'm sure there's been some developer that says develop it and the animals and wildlife will come, but we all know that's not true. Let someone make this property their field of dreams instead of paving it over and turning it into commercial property. Other issues obviously out along Highway 2 are traffic. Again, I've lived there my entire life. There's times that I can't have to sit there 10 minutes to be able to pull out with our pickup and trailer with hay or cattle and do my job. So traffic will be a major issue, adding to traffic along here too. Flooding and runoff is also an issue. You know, the water does back up. This property is surrounded by a slough. So I just urge you to consider not only the immediate consequences that we'll have, but also the long-term consequences that we'll have for the whole valley if Monroe proceeds to grow out our way. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. The next person that we have signed up to speak is Ms. Jackie Ngasi. Please come forward and state your name and address for the record.
Hi, my name is Jackie Legassi. I live at 24032153rd. I have to remember because I just moved in last Monday. I'm recently from Fremont, and I have to say the furs are right because everybody in Fremont wants to get to Snohomish County for the elbow room and move their chickens out this way. But I've been in a situation where an engineer, a.k.a. developer, has come into an area and said, oh, these aren't wetlands. We can develop it. There's no runoff. Don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. They didn't do your standard measure twice and cut once rule. And when I brought out the Army Corps of Engineers, they said, it is a wetland, it is this, and only we can declare it or not declare it. So it always makes me nervous when an engineer says it's definitely this or definitely that, because they can't declare that. It's a U.S. law. So if their science is great, then have it tested. Have the Army Corps of Engineers come out and see what it is. We had major runoff problems in that situation. There was major drainage problems. The city was sued. The county was sued. Everybody was sued. And even though nothing came of it except the developer being out of business, the city lost a lot of money fighting it. So you have to choose your battle, either up front or aftermath. I say, do all your paperwork first. Good luck.
Thank you.
The next person that we have who signed up to speak is Mr. Scott Stickney. Can you please come forward and state your name and address for the record? Thank you.
I'm Scott Stickney. I live at 24214, 153rd place in Monroe, which is about 150 yards from where Scott and Vicki, who've already testified, live. My wife and I own about a 15-acre place there. We have cattle and horses on our property, and we've lived there for almost 20 years. And before I entered my current profession, I was a farmer. And I live out there because I live with people or near people that I can relate to, farmers. And just so you know, everything that is procedural, I think, has already been addressed by other speakers. I just wanted to address the philosophical issue, the conceptual issue. I've actually lived in the area for 25 years. And what I've seen is our Main Street and Lewis Street have increasing empty space. I see a large parking lot with a huge grocery store that's going out of business. I don't see a need for more development in the area. I also see, however, many dairy farms that have left our area. Substantial economic contribution by numerous large dairy farmers have left. So, conceptually, what we're dealing with is a situation where we have a very well-established, long-established traditional use, a natural boundary, and a situation where, where we need to encourage the development of agricultural activity, not discourage it. And we certainly, in my view, don't need to be eliminating agricultural property when we have a city that has increasing empty storefronts, increasing development that is not being utilized. That's where we need to focus our attention, in encouraging folks to develop those areas, not develop traditional agricultural areas. The other thing I can speak to is, having lived off of Highway 2 now for almost 20 years, it's a little bit hard to really quantify the impact of the increased traffic on that road. Mrs. Furr mentioned getting in and out of Highway 2 with her horse trailers and her equipment trailers. I faced the very same problem. A couple of days ago, moving some cows, I sat off of Highway 2 for 15 minutes just waiting to get onto the road to be able to turn. We don't need more traffic out there. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, appreciate your time. Please give this careful consideration, and let's remember, this is a rural community. Thanks.
Thank you.
The
next person that we have who has signed up to speak is Trisna Tanis. Please come forward and state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, honorable council members. My name is Trisna Tanis. I am at 11201 Southeast 8th Street in Bellevue. I am counsel for and am here on behalf of Heritage Baptist Church, the applicant and compliance participants for the East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment and Rezone Proposal. First, I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you tonight. I think if there's one thing that we can all agree on is our appreciation of your time and attention in considering our comments to you in considering this proposal. I certainly believe in the importance and value of the public process as recognized by the GMA's mandate to ensure early and continuous public participation in comprehensive plan development and updates. The city has embraced and fulfilled the public process. It has included the public in its decision-making process in this proposal. As you know, on August 28th, a draft SEIS was issued. Public comments and review were solicited and received. The Planning Commission held a public hearing on the proposal and deliberated, discussed many issues, and in fact had a lot of questions that came out of it. As you can see in their findings and conclusions, and I want to read a couple of those when they were considering various criteria for the rezone and the comprehensive plan amendments. For criteria one that affects public health, the commissioners noted, and I quote, based on the information presented today, answers to concerns over public safety impacts pertaining to potential landslide hazards on the hillside to the north and northwest of the subject property have not been responded to and addressed. Criteria two, questions regarding landslide hazards, sources of water, survey, etc., remain unanswered. And it goes on and on from there. But even though the commissioners had all of these unanswered questions, there is no doubt that the public process served its purpose and called to attention those issues that needed answers. The final SEIS, as intended by SEPA, does in fact address, respond to, and answer these unresolved questions. The public process really allows this final SEIS to do its job. Next, I want to tell you why Heritage is here tonight. Of course, Heritage is the applicant for this proposal. But even more importantly, Heritage is here tonight because this council last December decided to comply with the Growth Management Hearings Board's order and findings. This council decided to take on the necessary work to correct those deficiencies found by the board. This means that this compliance work, the scope of which was approved by this council, is the preparation of the supplemental EIS. Also last December, this council directed and authorized Heritage to take on the primary responsibility and costs in its retention of PACE Engineering and PACE's subconsultants to prepare the supplemental EIS. Heritage has done its part and has done what you had asked of it. You have the final SEIS. This is how and why Heritage is here tonight. This final SEIS combined with the 2013 EIS provide you the requisite information in regards to environmental impacts arising out of the East Monroe proposal. You have information and analysis that the Planning Commission did not have by having this final SEIS. You have answers to those unanswered and unresolved questions. These answers, together with information and analysis from the SEIS and this 2013 EIS, corroborate and confirm your previous decision to adopt the East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment and rezone. These two EISs tell you that the proposal meets the requisite criteria for approval. Thus, we request that this council honor its prior decision and commitment. We request that this council adopt ordinances to amend the comprehensive plan and zoning for East Monroe. Thank you.
Thank you. The next person that we have who signed up to speak is Ms. Susan Boyd. Ms. Boyd, will you please come forward and state your name and address for the record? Thank you.
My name is Susan Boyd. I'm with PACE Engineers in Kirkland, Washington. And I was the project manager throughout this whole process. I'm not going to take up much of your time tonight. You guys have heard me speak enough about this proposal. I just wanted to start by saying thank you to both the council and the staff for all the time that's been spent on this. It's been a long and arduous process, as you know. Tristan stole some of my thunder about the commitments that we made last year. I just want to remind you that those commitments, we took them very seriously. A lot of time and money has been invested into hiring additional consultants and having deeper and further than they did in the original EIS. What it results in is an SEIS that is thorough, well vetted, accurate. It's a document that's detailed enough for a rezone and far beyond that. I guess I've never seen a rezone take this much effort for environmental analysis, but nevertheless, it was done. But some of the appellants have claimed that this was just done by a bunch of engineers and the city just took it. That's not true. This whole process of evaluation has been through two planning directors from the city of Monroe, two CEPA officials, the city engineer, the council, the planning commission. It's not just we do it and you accept it. We had numerous rewrites and questions, and the attorneys reviewed it. We had a public hearing, a local public hearing that had passed on, and a few questions from the growth management hearing board. The SEIS and the decision tonight should focus only, I believe, on those growth management hearing board questions. And I'd encourage you to look at it like that. Honor the commitment you made last year to see this through and get to growth management hearing board and see what they have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. The next person that we have who signed up to speak is Larry, is it Karpak?
Karpak.
Please come forward and state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
I'm Larry Karpak with Watershed Science and Engineering in Seattle, Washington. I'm a hydraulic engineer and I'm here on behalf of the applicant. As I said, I'm the hydraulic engineer. We were retained to develop a hydraulic analysis of this property to identify water levels on the property in the current condition and water levels under the proposed development condition so that decisions could be made about floodplain management and issues about those water levels. In the Planning Commission recommendation, there were three issues that touch on, or three questions that touch on issues that we did work towards, and I wanted to talk to them here. They were the source of the flood water, the flood height, and the survey, by which I believe they mean the topographic data for the site. The first was the source of the water. As I said, we were retained to develop a hydraulic model for the site, and our first step in that was to go out and visit the site to understand the connections to the river and what is going on at the site. When we scoped the project, we fully expected there would be a bridge, maybe, or a culvert at the east end of the slough in the area where the gentleman earlier was showing where the historic slough used to connect to the Skykomish River. Undoubtedly, that area connected to the Skykomish River before the railroad was built and before the highway was built. That's an old remnant slough of the Skykomish River. We expected there would still be a pipe through there, a culvert through there, or maybe even a bridge through there. We went on the site and were surprised to find there wasn't a culvert there. We thought that was odd, so we did root around in that area, pulling up grass, pulling up stumps, looking for culverts. I saw the same little feature that was in that picture. We did not find evidence of a culvert at that site. If there's a culvert buried, I don't know about it. We looked and we did not find that. Coming back to our office, we connected with Burlington Northern and obtained design drawings for the railroad, and those design drawings showed the culverts at the west end of the site, the culvert under the railroad embankment at the west end of the site, did not show any indication of a culvert at the east end of the site. We went on and modeled the project like that. We put the connection through Highway 2 at the east end to allow water to come down the roadside ditch to go through the connection from the land surrounding the site and connection at the west end of the site. And those are the sources, the main sources of water we see. In our report, we said there's no connection. There's been a comment that there could be a seepage connection, and that's possible, that there could be seepage flow through the railroad embankment. But in terms of the amount of flow that would come through seepage versus the amount of flow that comes through the 72-inch culvert at the east end of the site or off of the local drainage area, that's negligible. With this information, we built our hydraulic model. The second issue that's been raised is the flood height, and we use that model to establish what that flood height would be. I'm a hydraulic engineer. This is good hydraulic engineering, and I stand by that flood height. I don't believe there is any question about the flood height here. I was responsible for the flood study that was done here, that would form the preliminary flood insurance study that will possibly one day become the effective flood insurance study for this area. When we did that study, we didn't model this area over here. We just took the base flood elevations that were in the river and we applied them to the north side of the river. And it was under the assumption there was a major connection on both ends. When we got out there and saw that wasn't the case, we built a refined model so that we could get site-specific flood water surface elevations, and that's what we've done. The last issue is with the topographic data and the LIDAR. And I think the question comes about because we compared the LIDAR data, which is the best available data for broad-scale application, to site-specific surveys at 72 points that we had on the site. And the average of those showed a difference in elevation of about a half a foot, 0.55 feet. We rounded at 0.6. That's the adjustment we made to the LIDAR data just on the basis of these site-specific surveys. LIDAR data would have an accuracy there, I would say.
I'm going to need to ask you to wrap up.
Okay, plus or minus 1 foot. It's been stated that why don't we just survey the whole site? Well, you cannot physically survey the whole site. LIDAR data provides us with, as I said, the best topographic data for the entire site. Even if you were to survey the site, you would have a bunch of spot surveys that would be highly accurate, but you would be interpolating data everywhere in between them. And if you had a 2 foot contour map, it would equally be a plus or minus 1 foot elevation. So,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next person that we have who signed up to speak tonight is Scott Brainard, or Bernard. Can you please come forward and state your name for the record? Thank you.
I'm Scott Rainer, principal ecologist from Wetland Resources in Everett. The address is 9505 19th Avenue Southeast, Suite 106. I'm just here to talk briefly about the wetlands, streams, fish and wildlife that are located on the east site and to answer any questions that you might have. The existing site provides limited wildlife habitat due to its proximity to a major highway, historical clearing and grading that's occurred on site, and significant presence of invasive species in and along the slough. The slough itself is noted as a type 1 stream and provides habitat for salmonids, both resident and anadromous species. Due to the slough's proximity to the Skykomish River, it is anticipated that bull trout and Chinook salmon are present within the slough at some point during their life cycle, likely during the rearing portion of their life cycle. No threatened or endangered wildlife species were observed by us when we were conducting our field investigations, nor are there any mapped on any of the existing available resources. No direct impacts to the on-site wetlands and streams are proposed as part of the development or any of the development alternatives, with the exception of, no direct impacts are proposed to any of the on-site wetlands or streams as part of any of the development alternatives. with the exception of the no action alternative, some form of excavation for compensatory flood storage will be necessary. The excavation will occur outside of the boundary of the wetland and outside of the boundary of the slough, but will occur within the buffer. As part of the compensatory flood storage excavation, invasive species such as Himalayan blackberry and reed canary grass will be removed and dense native vegetation will be planted. The planting of the dense native vegetation and the removal of the invasive species has the potential to enhance fish and wildlife habitat by increasing species diversity, vegetation density and structure, providing thermal control to the stream, and eventually providing large woody debris contribution to the stream. With that, I'd like to thank you for your time and answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next person that we have who signed up to speak is Cray Erdman. Did I get your name right? Please come forward and state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Craig Erdman. I'm an engineering geologist with GeoEngineers, and I'm here on behalf of the applicant. And I'm here primarily to respond to some of the comments that were made in the Planning Commission document. In particular, a couple of those key comments were raised there earlier, a few speakers before, particularly related to landslide hazard issues, and, you know, particularly as they relate to public welfare and the environment. And, you know, I know there's a lot of passion, a lot of emotion about this issue, and I certainly can empathize with that. We've worked on a lot of critical landslide and hazard issues in the state of Washington, you know, I've worked in the Puget Sound area primarily for the last 20 years of my career, and you know, I'm very familiar with the glacial geology and the interglacial geology that helps forms a lot of the hillsides in this area. And the principal on this project has also been working in this area. We've known each other for over 30 years now, you know, we've worked together for most of the last 20 years on projects, especially with landslides and landslide hazards and managing those hazards. So I know some of the issues that have been discussed in the comments during the Planning Commission meetings have related to sort of the adequacy of our studies. And we've done a thorough office review of all the available information that we can put our hands on. We've looked at aerial photographs that date back several decades, as we talked about last week. We've looked at LIDAR data. That's something that is very well accepted by the geologic community in terms of relying on that for interpreting features. The types of landslide hazard features that we identify are considered shallow landslides. And as you look at our page figure 6 of our report, we have mapped that entire hillside there as a landslide hazard area. And it's a landslide hazard area as defined by the critical area ordinance in the city of Monroe, and also based on our experience. And we have a lot of experience with that type of stuff. And so there is a recent landslide that we know has been questioned in terms of accuracy of its location. A recent aerial photograph indicates that our mapping of that feature is pretty much spot on. We showed that recent landslide last week, or 2 weeks ago when we were here. I also have some photographs in a memo that the council members have been provided here that kind of show some of the what we could see at the time that we completed our hillside reconnaissance. You know, even though we were not able to visit the entire hill slope, LEAF was off, so we had a good view of a lot of the terrain. You can see, even from a distance, the recent landslide. And that landslide was photo-documented, geo-referenced in terms of its location, and we used a GPS-based unit to map where that feature was. And like I said, it maps well with what we saw. So what our interpretation here is that we expect that there will be episodic landslides just like that across that hillside, and there will be no difference between the existing conditions or under proposed conditions, with the understanding that the flood elevations are not changing, and the changes, any differences in flow velocities are very low. Any high flow velocities that we see in the natural channel are velocities that can be handled by a grassline swale. So we're not talking about extreme velocities here. And as a result, it's our opinion that what we've done is meets the standard of practice. It's a due diligence and on the part of the applicant and the applicant's team. And, I'm a licensed geologist. I have a reputation as well as just professional credentials that are on the line here. And, it's emotional for me, too. And, I'm not here to put anybody at risk, and nobody else is. So I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. The next person that we have who signed up to speak is Stefan Weeks. Can you please come forward and state your name and address for the record? Thank you.
Hello, my name is Stephen Weeks. I live at 13806 310th Avenue in Sultan, and I'm here on behalf of Heritage Baptist. I have been a member for a very long time, and I serve on the leadership team of the church as well. A couple quick notes that I'd like to provide to the council. Thank you for your time tonight. We appreciate it. A couple things that I'd like to present to you today. One of that is that there's much concern about what will happen to this property. What's going to happen on it, and really what we're discussing here is a simple rezone. That's really what it is. There is no project on the table. There is nothing that is proposed at this time. We've prepared one of the most comprehensive EISs ever prepared in the city of Monroe for a simple rezone. And we have fulfilled every single bit of information that has been requested of us, and we believe that we've operated in good faith in that facility. Secondly, I'd like to say the council voted at least twice to proceed with this project. Their direction to staff, direction to the city has been clear, and we would appreciate moving forward with this. Finally, once this is completed, then we can move on to the next things. We really have been frustrated with this process. This rezone started in 2010. It is now 2015. This has been a very long time, and we believe that we fulfilled every single piece of information and everything that's been required of us. And we would ask that you honor the commitment that we made in last year, that we would continue forward with this process and move forward with growth management work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next person that we have who signed up to speak is Pastor Minnick. Please come forward and state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Thomas and members of the council. I'm Pastor Thomas Minnick, 13789 194th Drive Southeast in Monroe, speaking for the applicant Heritage Baptist Fellowship. I'll be brief. We ask your support on this comp plan amendment and rezone really for two very simple reasons. The first is that over the 5+ years this application has been before the city, the site has been studied and researched in a fashion previously unprecedented for any non-project application. Every single environmental question that could possibly be asked for a non-project rezone has been asked and answered. Answered with very costly and, we believe, unimpeachable science. The opponents have bombarded the city with anecdotes and, in some cases, gross inaccuracies. But we've provided well-researched answers. The science plainly says there's absolutely no environmental reason to deny this rezone application. We know many of the neighbors up on the bluff want to protect their beautiful view of our property, but the hyperbole about environmental concerns has always been and remains tonight inaccurate. These studies have proven that. Secondly, and more importantly, the vote you will soon take on this comp plan amendment and rezone should be no more than formality. The decision to rezone the site was made by a 5-2 vote of the council on December of 2013. It was reaffirmed almost exactly 11 months ago, December 9th, 2014, when we were all right here in this chamber. At that time, this very same body passed Councilman Hanford's motion affirming Council's commitment to seeing this process through completion. I'm quoting from the language of that motion. Councilman Hanford's words were, quote, "move to comply with the final decision and order of the Growth Management Hearings Board and authorize the mayor to take all appropriate and necessary action to revise the FEIS at the expense of the applicant and process the proposed East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment and rezone," end quote. That motion was passed by this council, then based entirely upon that action by the council, our church proceeded with the extraordinarily expensive studies required to satisfy both the city staff and the growth board. We took this very expensive action based on the statement by this council that they were committed to seeing this process through. To allow us to invest this huge amount of money necessary to complete these studies and then to refuse to complete this process would be an unthinkable violation of the integrity of this process. We called upon to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in studies and professional fees. Applicants need to know that the city will, in turn, keep its promises. We believe you to be an honorable legislative body, so we simply ask you to honor your commitment to us and vote yes on this comp plan amendment recently. Thank you.
Thank you. Next person who signed up to speak is, and Scott and Vicki Fuhrer, your name is here, you've already spoken, so we're going to go ahead and check that off. Jackie, you've already spoken as well. Mr. Anderson, you've already spoken also. Mr. Douglas Hamer, please come forward and state your name and address for the record.
Oh, yeah. You're going to be my own easel.
You're going to be your own easel this time. Okay.
You've been listening to Douglas Hamer, 21122 Calvin Road. You know, you've been hearing me on this thing for 5 years, so I've just decided to take a totally different tack. I want to talk about learning experiences. Now, in 1979 in Portland, I started building an 1,100 square foot house. When I say building, I did everything, absolutely everything, from the footings to the roof cap. And I did the plumbing, the wiring, I built myself all the cabinets, every window and door in the place. I made them all from scratch. It was my giant backyard art project and learning experience. Giganteum. okay, where was I? Anyway, it took me 7 years. And probably at least half of that time was spent correcting mistakes and rethinking my enthusiasm for various design ideas. Like, for instance, I originally intended to actually make a sculpt, my own ceramic toilets and sinks. But growing into the realization that at some point, functionality becomes more important than originality. I gave that one up. I didn't make notes for this because it was all stuff that was in my head. When I first started this project, I tore down an old two-story farmhouse, turn-of-the-century farmhouse, nail by nail, hauled it all back to my house 20 miles, piled it up in a big stack, and that was a very sorry learning experience, that one, because when I was doing it, one time at a gig at a tavern, a gal came up and she said, what do you do when you're not playing music? And my fellow bandmate immediately interjected, he sorts lumber. And that was truer than it was funny, because every time I wanted a piece of wood, it was on the bottom of the pile somewhere. Anyway, enough of that learning experience. How did I get here? How did I get to Monroe? Well, in 2005, old George asked me to come up and help him take care of his wife, Maida, who was my father's cousin. She was 99. She'd just fallen and broken her hip. And George was frail and falling himself, but he was determined to keep them in their house. I'd been working at Home Depot for 8 years, and I was ready for a change. And besides that, I had been sort of a stand-in son for Maida since I was a little boy, so it really wasn't a request totally out of the blue. And I thought, how long is it going to take? How long is it going to be? A year? Year and a half? It'll be a learning experience. And indeed it was. I like to cook. And it's amazing what a balanced diet will do for your health. George, at 5'10", in less than 2 months, put on 30 pounds. He went from 130 to 160 pounds. Maida survived until after her 101st birthday. And she was very frail and rather confused. She was proud of her steel hip when she managed to remember it. Anyway, when Maida passed away, George and I put 100,000 miles on the car, getting lost, all over the western United States. In 2010, George collapsed, and I got to the hospital, but he passed away joking and flirting with the nurses to the very end. So why didn't I go back to Portland in my unique little house? Well, this is why. And the environment, the natural environment here is amazing. I don't know, if you've lived here your whole life, you may not even realize just how incredible the clouds are here. They come in and they frame the landscape in unique and fantastic ways almost every day. The beautiful river valley with the rugged Cascades at the end, it's hard to beat. I came up here numerous times visiting, but I never really understood the spiritual woo nature of this place until I was living in it, in its rhythms and pulses on a daily basis. I get up at, doesn't matter if I go to bed at 3 a.m.
Mr. Hamer, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we need to ask you to wrap up. You're over your 5 minutes.
Okay, well, all right. God, I thought it was done. I thought I had it 4.5 minutes. I don't know what happened.
Thank you.
Okay, I just want to say that, I took this photograph and turned it into this, and I was a little wild, but it was a lot of fun doing, and I have empathy for Pastor Minnick, because I'm sure the church had a lot of enthusiasm for building that property, and but it's life.
Thank you.
It's a learning experience. Hold on. Anyway.
Thank you, Mr. Hammer.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The next person that we have who signed up to speak is Mr. Jeff Sherwood. Sherwood, please come forward and state your name for the record. Thank you.
My name is Jeff Sherwood. I live at 17493 136 Place, Southeast in Monroe. I'm a soil physicist, commercial real estate appraiser, former planning commissioner here at the city. I've heard all of the testimony, obviously, tonight and before. This property is inside the city limits. I drew a map, put up a map of the city. I outlined all the places where you can and cannot build inside the urban growth area and the city limits. And this property is just unique in that it has adequate size to support improvements that can't be supported anywhere else in town if it's rezoned to commercial. So I understand the physical aspects of the property. I've appraised it several times. I've been on it probably half a dozen times. I understand the physical nature of it. You have over 40 acres of property, of which only roughly 25% is usable because of the various setbacks and buffers from the critical areas that have been identified. As a result, any project that would be placed on this property down the road would be already adequately buffered.
It's obvious from the process that we've seen go before, the public involvement, that if an actual project were proposed down the road on this property, that we'd be subjected to adequate scrutiny to ensure that it was environmentally compliant and environmentally sensitive and not impacting to the property to the greatest extent possible. I believe that the property is physically capable of supporting a large-scale improvement, and as I said before, inside the urban growth area, it is probably the only piece left that could support improvements of that size. I understand there's vacancies, I understand there's smaller commercial properties in town, but none that could support the type of improvements this property could support. We're projecting to add maybe as many as 10,000 more people. We see the plat activity that's occurring right now and how many people that's going to be adding at 2.5 per household. And as a result of all of that, there is going to be increased pressure on commercial uses desiring to locate in this community. If we look at our industrial land supply, we can see that it is becoming woefully inadequate. And so I believe, as we did with the Global Lands Report, trying to ascertain, do or do we not have enough property to support the population which has been assigned to us, we know that that's a dubious undertaking. We do not have an adequate commercial land infrastructure in this town to accommodate any large-scale users. I think it would be a shame to turn such people away, and absent the approval of this rezone, that will occur. And I believe that since we want to support our community and make sure that we have adequate supporting infrastructure, I believe it's in the city's best interest to approve this rezone. You have my letter from several days ago, I trust. I saw it out on the desk, and that provides more detail in regard to my thinking. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherwood. Thank you. The next person we have who signed up to speak is Ms. Misty Blair. Ms. Blair, would you come forward and state your name and address for the record? Thank you.
Misty Blair, 15403 Calhoun Road, Monroe. I have provided extensive comments that are in the record. I hope that even though this is the end stage, that you guys have an opportunity to go back and review the comments that were submitted. A lot of people in this room spent a lot of time and energy putting those together. I think I want to just point out that I hear the proponents of this rezone saying that this is an unheard of amount of work that's being asked to be done here for this environmental impact statement, but I'd like to point out that it's also really uncommon to see a piece of property that's 75% encumbered by critical areas go from your lowest density designation to your highest, most intensive designation, and that kind of builds in this issue of having to look more closely at these studies than you normally would, because you wouldn't normally see someone going from limited open space to a general commercial designation. I think if you could find other jurisdictions that were doing that, you would see the same level of review being required, which is why when we took this to the board, they found it inadequate and sent it back. I think if you look at some of those comments, my comments were responded to in the final EIS that I just started looking at today, but the responses are not adequate to address. A lot of them oversimplified the issues, and we will be going back to the board for compliance, and I think you guys all realize that once the ordinance and the EIS was invalidated, the burden of proof switches from the petitioners to the city, and so we will all have the opportunity to revet these issues again to the board. And the main issue here is the alternatives that were provided. So you basically have a no action, do nothing, leave the property vacant, and all other alternatives are an 11-acre build-out. That doesn't give you guys a range of development scenarios to look at. So when the hydrologists and the geotech, they were looking at that same scenario. Nothing happening, or 11 acres. So all they can tell you about is what the all three alternatives are going to have the same impact, because they're all three the same buildable envelope. If you were given actual alternatives, you would be able to see how the traffic would look different under a single-family residential build-out compared to a commercial build-out. You'd be able to see if somebody was trying to push the limits and build out as much as possible, because this is not an 11-acre rezone, this is a 43-acre rezone. And so if you were able to see if someone pushes those reasonable use limits on the property, what is the buildable limit? A big thing that keeps being brought up is the flood. Well, 1401, MMC 1401, talks about the floodplain as being the firm maps from 1999. That puts this property in the 500-year floodplain. Doesn't have a compensatory storage requirement. So when the hydrologist says, as long as the elevation doesn't change, this is our review. Well, we don't know that that's the case, because if somebody was to come in and build today, they don't have compensatory storage requirement. So they're looking at it in the EIS with a requirement that your code does not have. These are all, and I also hear people sounding like promises were made. And my understanding is that the promise that was made was to move forward and to look at the EIS again one more time, not to approve, because under CEPA you shouldn't be making a decision before you have the information to make the decision. And it's unfortunate if that is, you know, the property owner, if that's how it plays out. But if you look at the comments that we've already provided, I think that you can see that the EIS wasn't done adequately the second time either, and this will be sent back by the board again. So, you know, if you were to see the correct analysis, you would be able to see what alternatives you have. And beyond the alternatives that you were shown, there are other alternatives that I think if this was done by the city and not by the applicant's consultants, you would see an option of taking this out of the UGA and giving it back to the county, trading them for property that actually has urban development density potential. Other jurisdictions do that all the time when they end up with a piece of property that just doesn't fit in the city limits. It was brought into the city before the GMA went into effect, and it might just not belong here. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. So the last person that we have who signed up to speak has already spoken this evening. That's Mr. Scott Stickney. Is there anybody else that would like to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe? Yes, please come forward. State your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Hello, Ashley Sellers, 209-30 East Brickmont Drive. All right. So, first, I'd like to say I don't need to repeat what your votes were. You guys are all over 5 years old, and I'm sure you remembered what your vote is. I would like to say, though, that a sign of integrity is somebody who can always be willing to change and adapt to information. And so to tell you, your vote should remain the same because you voted that seems really inconsistent with what your job is. Your job isn't here to just vote the same thing every time. I would like to make a couple of statements regarding this, and then I'd like to make a broader statement regarding this city. This form that was submitted, this letter by Mr. Sherwood, this should not even be applicable. This should have been submitted during the public hearing time that the rest of us had to submit things, and so that this shouldn't even be addressed today, because we all had time to do this. So really, this seems not right. The other issue I'd like to address, and has been my biggest concern here, is the landslide issue. And the landslide issue to me is, it was called out by the Growth Management Hearing Board, and it's an issue of public safety, which is one factor that the Planning Commission used to make their decision, was public safety. And in the report several times in the EIS, it says that they were not allowed access to the bluff. Well, let me tell you, I went door to door because I'm a passionate person. It's like bred in me. And I'm like a thoroughbred resource man. And I have 16 people that are open to their properties being surveyed for landslide issues to see. Because the EIS says we weren't able to see if there was drainage issues. We weren't able to see. We don't know. We couldn't test. There were 16 people that signed. I'll read it to you. I, the below signed, recognize that the East Monroe property is scheduled for rezone. As part of this rezone, the DSEIS PACE that submitted states that because of lack of access permission, they were unable to access and obtain information regarding the bluff, as they weren't able to evaluate it due to lack of access. By signing the below, I'm making the City of Monroe and all parties involved in the DSEIS aware that I have not been contacted regarding access to my property. And if I would have been, I would have been open to having my property surveyed so that the City of Monroe could make an educated decision regarding the safety aspects involved in the East Monroe Green Zone. I believe the City of Monroe needs to address all landslide potential before making this decision. And I wrote that, so obviously I concur with that statement. So I would like to submit this for record. I would also like to say that if you did brief research, you will find other cities that have themselves in hot water because of this very issue. Because of development or redirection of water, Everett actually is facing that right now. And a city in Salt Lake, Utah, is also doing the same thing. So I really think to move forward without all the information regarding public safety is a huge flaw for this council. I also think that part of the Planning Commission was asked, is this consistent with the area? It is not consistent with what is out there. It is absolutely not consistent with the property that's there. And you've heard from people that have lived here for eons. I have not lived here a year and a half, and somehow politics found me. So the other thing, so I'm going to move off of East Monroe, which you guys have heard enough. It's exhausting. Last week I said I need a bumper sticker that says I survived, and now I need to say I don't freaking know if I will. We had a recent election, right? And there's in 2013, in Monroe's Journal Lock, there were 17,724 people in Monroe. In this election, 2,025 votes have been tallied so far for city council votes. And that was for the Scarborough versus Davis. And I have to tell you, that is sad. And what that says to me as a person is that this city, these people, these residents don't feel like their voice matters. And it's a sad day to me when I make a decision on who I vote for off of what you write or what I don't like about what you've done, instead of you sending out flyers, sending out information. The fact that this city would have an election without a town hall meeting where people can come and hear your views is absolutely, like, crazy to me. How am I supposed to, like, look at your picture and say, all right, well, you look better than you, all right? I mean, I just think that overall, you guys have a chance here tonight to show people that you value what you were elected for, which is to represent these citizens. And the Planning Commission doesn't live up on Griffmont, because I get it, we live there, we care more, I get it, but they don't live there. Their duty is to represent the citizens and refer to you what they feel like is in best interest of this city, what is in best interest and sits with the Planning Commission, and what the plan is for the city. And let me tell you, I sat while they went line by line one meeting, and those guys are committed to this city. And so I just really would ask that you look at the landslides, that you think about this city, and that you think about the message that you're sending people, because I'm finishing, one sentence. Week after week, meeting after meeting, there have been people here every week talking to you, sharing their feelings. And I just think it's important. And I went door to door with Scarborough, and I've talked to people. And you can't find people in favor of this. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Okay, is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak on any issue related to the City of Monroe tonight? Please come forward and state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Brad Michino, 22127 Yeager Road. There are so many reasons why this doesn't make sense. You've got people saying, well, we looked at all the information in our office because we couldn't gain access. The last lady just showed that they probably didn't try to gain access. You have another consultant that has testified that there is a 3-foot culvert going underneath Highway 2. It's a 4-foot culvert. If he can't operate a tape measure, how accurate is the rest of his testimony or his report? I don't think if anybody goes out and looks at it, that anybody could agree that this is a good thing. You go down to the industrial area, all I see are vacant properties and vacant buildings. The last thing the city needs is more industrial area, especially something that would cost that amount of money to ever do anything with. There are no services, no mitigation at all for what that would do as an industrial area. And as you can see by the people that showed up today, pretty much anybody that was speaking for this has a financial gain in it. The people that are speaking against it are the ones that have to live with it. So I ask that you put yourself in their position and see if this is something you'd want to live with. That's all.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak to the City Council on any issue? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Thank you, everybody, for coming and speaking this evening. Councilmember Cutterback.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Cutterback. I have a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion to approve the consent agenda? Please let the record show that Councilmember Hanford is not currently in the room. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. We now have a need for an executive session. Our attorney will read in the record.
The City Council will hold an executive session to discuss with legal counsel representing the city litigation or potential litigation to which the city, the governing body, or a member acting in an official capacity is or is likely to become a party when public knowledge regarding the discussion is likely to result in an adverse legal or financial consequence to the agency.
So we will move into an executive session for approximately 10 minutes. We will not require that everybody leave the room. We'll go into another room. So, thank you. Okay, good evening. I was going to open up the meeting again. So we're back out of executive session. We have all council members back in the room except for Councilmember Gamble, who's absent this evening. We're back to unfinished business. This is unfinished business item number one, AB 15195, discussion, second addendum to concessionaire and property use agreement with H3O for cable wakeboard park facilities at Lake Tai Park. And Mr. Brazel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. We've discussed this the last time on October 27th, and Council gave some clear direction back to H3O. Since that time, staff can work with H3O to answer several questions. They provide documents that are in your packet this evening in regards to not only the cost to remove the towers, but a brokerage agreement in regards to the towers that Council can consider in place of a bond. And then they've also provided a letter of support for the project from their fourth investor that they have online. The main matters that weren't addressed the last time we discussed this are listed under the recommended actions. One has to do with the proposed extension, if you will, of phase two, the time allotted for that part of the work to be done. Council elected not to discuss that at that point and wanted to bring that back. And then the other is in regards to the security bonds that the council had talked about being in place, and that's the information that H3O has provided. H3O is in the audience this evening to answer any questions, and of course, I'm available to answer questions.
Okay. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to clarify to make sure that we're all on the same page. So, the city and H3O has agreed to what we've discussed for the last several weeks, except for, like you said, Gene, about the under the requested action. So the construction deadlines and the security. So those are the only two items that we're focusing on, because that's my understanding.
That's what I understand as well.
Okay. So my thoughts on the security is that I appreciate getting the information. Those would satisfy, in my mind, what we were looking for, which was the security and make sure that things could be taken care of if it didn't go according to what we wanted. As far as so security-wise, I'm in agreement with that. As far as the construction deadlines, I'd like to hear what other council members think, but I really don't see us entering into an agreement when permits will be expiring in the middle of that. So I'm concerned about that. So I'm a little more hesitant to be negotiable on that issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. In agreement with the security stuff, I appreciate the numbers that came forth for you guys, and I think you guys are sitting out there. And certainly, if brokerage agreement is a better way to go, then I'm fine with that as well. Whatever works, it works for us either way. And if we need to remove the towers get removed. So from that standpoint, that one's neither here nor there. Whatever is most expeditious in doing that one works fine. With regard to the construction deadlines, I'm okay with either if we don't meet and be flexible on that, then we're not going to get a building at all. And so I'm okay with what they've proposed. I know shortening it up like we did to the March 18th was based on, as we talked about last time, was based on some of those permits, and we actually took care of that last time in our discussion. That was no longer an issue. Based on the order in which you did it, doing it sooner than later, if I'm not mistaken, something to that effect. I can't remember the exact order in which we discussed that, but this is the one where the March 18th date didn't matter if they got the permits beforehand or something. If they dealt, I can't remember which one it was. What was the one? I'm asking you, Gene.
Okay.
That's why I'm looking at you. No, I'm good.
What we had talked about in the past is that under phase one, the majority of the work is going to be done within the water, right on the shoreline, will be completed phase one. And so for the phase two, they are basically just going to get a construction permit for the building itself and then some minor work around there. So the thought process is it'll be a lot easier to obtain that permit because you won't need a Corps of Engineers permit.
That's what it was. Okay.
Thank you.
The Corps of Engineer permit, and I was trying to remember that one was no longer an issue, which is where the March 18th date came from in the first place. Thanks. And with that, I want a building, and if it's going to take a little bit longer to do that, this is a maximum. The building could be built before that, but this guarantees that it gets done at all, which is what we want, and so I'm okay with what we had proposed here originally. If that's the amount of time that it takes, then at least we end up with the building, which is what we wanted, which is something that's important to all of us. So from that aspect, we'll have been enjoying it for a long time, and then we'll have a building as well. And so with that, I'm in support of the red text, leaving it at 5, at maximum of 5. And as permits are needed, they'll have to deal with that themselves. But the big one, the Army Corps of Engineering stuff, is no longer an issue. So I don't think that date of March 18th is applicable, so I'm good with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
I agree also with the security, so I appreciate the information. I'm in agreement with that. So the building, I'm a little bit, because I heard Councilmember Gehring say he wants a building, but it's my understanding, and they're asking for 5 years, but they can walk away at 5 years. Is there anything in the document that ensures that if they leave at 5 years, cancel the agreement, without building the building, is there any type of penalty?
There currently is not.
Yeah, so I think we did the 3 years to try to ensure that the building, put him on a timeline, the building will be built. As it stands right now, 5 years, we give them the 5 years, which we gave them that time, they could still walk away and there'd be no building. So there might be, I would propose that if the building is important to council, it was important when we made this decision originally, if council wants to give more time to build the building 5 years, then if they don't at that 5 year point, that we insert something where there's a lump sum, something where that compensates us for not getting that building after 5 years. So that would be my feedback on that.
Thank you. Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks, and I appreciate that. I just wanted to respond based on, I'm just trying to remember what we heard last time, and if there was a reason why the building wasn't built, that would mean essentially that they are out of business and don't have money. And we would be, I believe the actual term that was used was trying to get money from someone that's bankrupt, so we're not going to,
we
can put something in there, but the chances of us getting it if they go out of business are nil either way. Or we're not going to be able to get that, if I'm remembering what was said last time. So to that point, I'd rather err on the positive and say, yeah, let's get that building, let's give them the time to get it done, because it is something that we want. Versus I mean, there's always a possibility that it doesn't work out, and that's why we have the bonds and the stuff to take the towers out and things like that. With this, I think that's it's fair, and I think it's the best we can do based on your scenario, which is certainly possible. Regardless of what we, if we were to put something in, there would really be no way to collect it if that scenario actually happened. At least in my mind. So I just wanted to say that. Thank you.
Councilmember Cutterback.
Yeah, just to respond. We might not be able to, but at least if we have an agreement, we will. So, you know, might as well protect the city's best interest and write it into the agreement. If for some reason they go bankrupt and we can't collect, that's one thing. We don't know that down the road. They could walk away from the agreement at 5 years, not because they're bankrupt, just maybe they move on. Putting something in the agreement protects the city's interest versus not having it at all and saying, well, we might not be able to collect it, so let's just not write it in. That doesn't make sense to me. It makes sense to protect our interest, write it in. If at that time we come to that point where it's in the contract, an enforceable contract, if for some reason we can't collect it, so be it, but at least it's written in there and we have a chance of collecting it. So that would be my thoughts.
Councilmember Gehring.
And if I may just respond one more time.
Yeah.
There are a number of improvements we're getting regardless of the there's ecology that's being done, there's improvements of parking lots being done, there's a pad that's being built. There is the possibility if that building doesn't ever get built that, one, we still have ownership of it. We can do whatever we want with it. There are a number of enhancements that are happening in phase one. We're not ever left with nothing with this agreement. Regardless of whether the building's built. I'm positive, and I think that it is going to get built, and we need the extra time to make sure that it does. Sure, there's a possibility that it won't happen, but it's not that we get nothing out of it. There's actually a number of things we've talked about over and over that we still get. But I certainly understand. But trying to collect something that you... Yeah. We already went. Okay, thanks.
Okay, so if we have two issues then that are before us. One is the issue of security. I haven't heard anybody argue against H3O's proposal. So is there any objection to moving forward with the proposal that H3O has on security? Okay, I'm hearing, what's that? Oh, Councilmember Rasmussen, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate the information on that, you know. We talk about best interest of the city and protecting the city, and you know, it's great that the numbers came in a little bit lower, but you know, I'm still looking out for the city and want to make sure that we are very well covered, and you know, I'm in favor of requiring our additional bonds. So.
Okay. Is there anybody else that that would feel similar to Councilmember Rasmussen? Okay, so staff will go ahead and work on the security issue per H3O's request here. Now, going back to the issue of the building, yes, Mr. Breslin.
I just want to clarify on that issue. In talking with H3O, their preference is to lean towards the brokerage agreement. At first, I wasn't overly convinced that was a great option, but once we received the paperwork from SESI Tech, it secured in my mind it's coming for a long time. These are becoming more popular, so I'm comfortable with that. I just want some confirmation from council if they are.
Yeah.
Some head nods. So for the building then, with the requiring 5 years, I would like a motion as to whether or not council would like to have the proposed 5 years. Councilmember Gehring?
I would move to leave it as it is in the red text and allow a maximum of 5 years for the completion of phase two.
Second.
Okay, so I have a first and a second from Councilmembers Gehring and Councilmembers Camp to accept that proposal and to direct staff to update the contract accordingly. Again, this contract will come back to council. It's just a matter of trying to get certainty moving forward to finalize this. Discussion on the motion, Councilmember Camp and then Councilmember Cutterback. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. When we started this, we talked about the building. That always seemed to me as gravy. What I really was concerned about is the development of the lake, giving us additional decks for use, whatever we're just swimming or whatever we needed to have. But the big thing is the reinstallation of the BIOS well. Currently, all the runoff from every house in Frylands goes into that lake, and our kids swim in it. To me, it's worth it to go through it and take the risk of not getting the building just to have cleaner water that our kids can enjoy in the summertime. That's my point. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
And I won't be voting for that motion. And I have a different perception, obviously, when we talked about this, that the building was not gravy, that it was very important that we were going to walk away with the building. I agree that there will be improvements made, but I did hear you say, I want the building, were some of your first comments. So this voting on this as it stands right now does not ensure that we will get a building out of this. And yes, we will get improvements. But it's not what the intent was when we first started this. So I'll not be voting for that. Thank you.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Likewise, I won't be voting in favor of this. I sat where everyone else is at when this first started getting discussed, and that was the hot topic. That was the cherry on top, if you will, was having that building. And it may or may not happen. Even when we started to approach the phase one, phase two concept, I mean, that was still an attracting deal. And I heard a lot of concern up here on council is, well, we may not get the building if we do phase one, phase two. I mean, that's the reality, is we may not get that building, which was such a selling point for this entire council, at least the way I heard it sitting over there. And so, I mean, just think about that for a second. In regards to the BIOS well, it's come up a few times here in discussion, and it certainly serves a purpose, but the one thing I remember about the BIOS well, sure, if there's an effective one, it can clean the water that flows in the lake. But I remember, again, when this first came up, was the BIOS well was apparently damaged. Damaged, destroyed, because of flooding. Which is the same reasons why they want to build elsewhere. It's because of flooding. So I'm not, while the BIOS well, like I said, serves a purpose, and if it's done properly, it can be effective, but apparently we don't have one right now. And the lake is used frequently by swimmers, boaters, wakeboarders. I mean, everyone that uses the lake is generally in the water. And I haven't seen any harm done. So, and I think that was proven with some of the studies that H3O had done. So, I mean, for what it's worth, I don't see the BIOS well as a huge selling point. It's nice to have, but I wouldn't base a huge decision off of that. So.
Thank you, and staff will be chiming in just a second. Anybody into Jeopardy music? Mr. Brazel.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify a couple things. The BIOS well is planned to be in the second phase, just so everybody's clear on what is coming up in the first phase. It's essentially a byproduct that's tied to the new growth structure that would be going up in the new building. That being said, we still have water quality obligations because of the stormwater facility. So whether they do it or we do it, that improvement's got to be made in the next few years. So, and things are in motion for the city to take that on at some point in time. Grants, that type of thing, it should this not move forward or not be done in phase one. But I just want to make sure everybody's clear that it is listed currently under the phase one.
Okay, any further discussion? There's a motion on the floor. Okay, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes 5-2 with council members. What did I miss? Yeah, okay, we'll do 4-2. With council members Cutterback and Rasmussen voting against. Councilmember Hanford?
Yeah, just for clarification, Mayor, so the next step now is
We expect that the next step will be a final contract that will be brought forward to council for filing. So what staff will do now is they will work with our attorney to put on the finishing touches based on the conversation we've had here. Based on the feedback that we've received from H3O, it sounds like they'll be amenable to what you've done, how you voted this evening, and so the contract should be coming back. The time frame on that, probably not next week because it's a short turnaround with a holiday tomorrow, but probably December 1-ish.
I hope so. Yeah. I've got a lot of vacation coming up with things with Zach behind these guys right now. The last hours I'm here.
Okay. So that's what you're looking at for scheduling.
Okay. That's the reason I'm asking is because this is something we've been working on, and so I totally understand vacations and all that. No pressure as far as that's concerned, but whatever we can do to get this done would be great. Thank you.
Okay, the next item we have on our Councilman Rasmussen.
Thank you. Just one last question before we come off topic here. It wasn't on the agenda bill, but in regards to the past due rent. We talked about it. It's got to be paid. I know that was a concern of H3O's. I mean, are we in agreement there? I'm assuming, based off of the agenda bill, that we're going to get the past due rent paid?
In the work that I'm doing, Zach, to update the second addendum, that will be in there. The rent has to be paid. H3O will have to agree to that, just like they have to agree to everything else. But in verbal conversations with them, it's encouraging.
All right. Anything further? Okay. We're going to go ahead and move on to unfinished business item number 2 now. This is AB 15196, 2015 Comprehensive Plan Update. Mr. Osaki.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, given the somewhat late hour, I'll make this somewhat brief. I'll try to make it brief. I mean, what we're going to pass out tonight are some of the appendices. So what we've talked about so far in terms of the comprehensive plan update are chapters 1 through 10. Those are the key items of the comprehensive plan. There's actually 8 appendices to the document. And the appendices tend to be much of the technical background information that support the individual elements. So the actual chapters, for lack of a better analogy, is really what's important. It's kind of, where do you want to go as a community? Kind of where you're driving the vehicle to. The appendices tend to be the technical information. It's almost, you're more the mechanic. It's really in the details. So what the Planning Commission spent a lot of time on was focusing on the chapters. What we passed out tonight are 3 of the appendices, one on transportation, one on economic development, one on parks and recreation. And to some extent, during the course of these briefings, during the course of the last 6 months, we've talked about the economic development strategy, and we've talked about the transportation element and the transportation appendix. We have not talked much about parks and recreation, and I think it would be helpful if sometime between now and the public hearing that is scheduled for December 1st, that maybe Director Farrell and I give you a little bit of background on the parks and recreation element, if only because the Planning Commission gave a great deal of deference to the Parks Board and the work that the Parks Board did on the Parks and Recreation chapter and the Parks and Recreation Open Space Plan. So that would be a particular item I think we can brief you on before the public hearing. Just very briefly, the transportation appendices, a lot of technical detail. Inventory of streets, inventory of transit facilities, inventory of sidewalks throughout the city, traffic generation, forecast of traffic over time, the next 20 years, level of service estimates for intersections currently and what they're projected to be, and a future project list for transportation improvements. The economic development strategies, we spent some time talking about that. I just want to mention there's 6 key themes that are in the economic development chapter that are supported by the work in this economic development strategy appendices. Thriving downtown with vibrant Main Street character, a great place to start and operate a business, outdoor adventure destination, growing smart Monroe style, complete regional retail center, and a walkable, accessible, and interconnected community are part of the economic development strategies for this city. as proposed in the comprehensive plan chapters. There's a lot of demographic detail in there, a lot of information about office space, retail space, industrial space, past history and forecasts as well. So it's a lot of information about the real estate market within that particular appendices. And then the Parks and Recreation appendix, the plan, existing conditions, what the inventory of parks are right now, what we have as terms of future need, and how we plan to address that need over the next 20 years. So a lot of the detail work is in there, and then the Parks and Recreation chapter that you've already received kind of synthesizes that down into specific goals and policies within Chapter 2. So for now, that's the presentation for tonight. And either next week, or depending if you meet the week thereafter, you get the other five appendices, which are more the glossary, history of the public participation, and then the utilities element and capital facilities appendices as well. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Council, do you have any questions?
I think you might need a bigger book.
I think you will. I know you will.
Thank you very much, Mr. Osaki. Next item that we have on this evening's agenda is unfinished business item number 3. This is AB 15197, East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment and Zoning Map Amendment Rezone. Planning Commission recommendation. And Mr. Osaki again.
So, sorry.
Okay.
So, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I do have a PowerPoint slide presentation. All the information in here should be already on the record within the materials that have been provided to you, but I just want to spend some time to go through this somewhat briefly, because I think a lot of the items in this presentation have been discussed or touched on during the course of tonight. So the proposals before the City Council tonight are to consider the Planning Commission recommendation on two items. There's a comprehensive plan map amendment before the City Council to change 43 acres of property from a limited open space comprehensive plan designation to a plan designation called general commercial. And because the city zoning code mirrors in many cases the same terms as the comprehensive plan, there's a concurrent zoning map amendment, basically it's called a rezone, from limited open space to general commercial. A little bit of recent history, and actually if you go into the final supplemental EIS, the history even goes back further, but just recent history to give you an idea of where we've been and how we've gotten to this point in time. In September 27th, there was a final environmental impact statement issued for these two proposals, the comprehensive plan map amendment and the zoning map amendment. And then during the course of November 2013 and December 2013, the Planning Commission held a public hearing and deliberated on those two actions. And then on December 9th, the Planning Commission at that time made a recommendation of approval for these two actions. And then in December of 2013, the City Council approved the plan amendment and approved the rezone ordinances. So there were actually two ordinances, one for the comprehensive plan amendment and one for the rezone. Whoops. That City Council action was appealed in February 2014 to a body called the Growth Management Hearings Board. Growth Management Hearings Board is set up by state law to hear appeals of comprehensive plan amendments and development regulations. And then in September 2014, the Hearings Board issued an order and basically invalidated part of the comprehensive plan amendment ordinance, keeping in mind that that ordinance had a series of comprehensive plan amendments. One just happened to be the East Monroe comprehensive plan amendment. So the Hearings Board invalidated the section of that ordinance that applied to the East Monroe comprehensive plan map amendment, and then it invalidated in its entirety the rezone ordinance. And then in Appendix A to the final supplemental environmental impact statement, you have the full Growth Management Hearings Board order. On August 28th, in response to that board order, the city issued a draft supplemental environmental impact statement. A couple key words I've always said, draft. There's a process under state law. You issue a draft, you take public comment, and you do a final. Supplemental, this document supplements the environmental impact statement that was issued in September 27, 2013. And actually that September 27, 2013 EIS is adopted by reference as part of this final environmental impact statement. So as part of the public process for that draft supplemental environmental impact statement, the city held a public hearing. It was an optional public hearing. We didn't have to do it, but to encourage public comment, the city held a public hearing on the draft supplemental EIS on September 23rd. On October 9th, the written comment period was concluded. The EIS was issued August 28th. There's a 30-day comment period. It went to September 28th. There was a request for some time extension. The city granted that to October 9th, 2015 at noon. And then following that, the Planning Commission held a public hearing on the comprehensive plan map amendment and on the zoning map amendment. That public hearing was opened October 12th. The Planning Commission continued it to October 19th to deliberate, and it continued it to October 26th to make their final recommendation. The Planning Commission recommendation was denial of the comprehensive plan amendment and denial of the zoning map amendment, and you have as part of your agenda packet the Planning Commission findings and conclusions that they used to support their recommendation. And then last week on November 2nd, 2015, the final supplemental EIS was issued. Just a little bit about the property. 43 acres. It's actually five parcels. Fronts on US 2, and actually I have a little list here. But just so you can surprise yourself with the property, I think we're all familiar with it. All currently vacant. So it's approximately 43 acres of vacant property. Five lots. There's actually two lots in 2004. There's a short plat that created the five lots in its concurrent configuration. Fronts US 2 right away. Approximately 11 acres of the 43 acres are unencumbered by items such as buffers or critical areas, a critical area being a wetland or a stream, or a native growth protection area. There's an on-site stream. Part of that stream is subject to the city's shoreline master program jurisdiction. There's three on-site wetlands. The property lies at the base of the hillside to the northwest and to the north, and it does lie in a flood hazard area based on preliminary FEMA flood insurance rate maps. So the proposed comprehensive plan amendment, and these are just going to be some maps. This is the current comprehensive plan map for that particular area. The five parcels in question are kind of outlined in the light blue. That's the subject property. That's the 43 acres. The proposal before the City Council is, do you amend those five parcels to the general commercial designation? And so if the Council were to approve the comprehensive plan amendment, this is what the comprehensive plan map would look like. You have a rezone as part of this application as well. Very similar. Current zoning designation, limited open space, 43 acres, the five of the lot configuration is identified or outlined in blue. If the comprehensive plan map amendment is approved, and then the zoning map amendment is also approved, those properties would be rezoned to general commercial, and that's what the zoning map would look like. A few items about the EIS. The EIS was issued November, the final EIS, supplemental EIS, was issued November 2nd. It's prepared by PACE Engineers, three primary sub-consultants, Wetland Resources, Watershed Science and Engineering, Geoengineers. Key items that they covered: Wetland Resources, critical areas and habitat, Watershed Science, Hydraulic Analysis and Flooding, Geoengineers, Landslide and Geologic Hazards. You go to the final EIS, those would be Appendix B, C, and D. The final EIS, supplemental EIS, again, it responds to the Growth Management Hearings Board order. It's a series of additional analysis in there focused on certain items, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. And the final supplemental EIS, by state law, responds to written and oral comments received during that public comment period. Again, that written comment period was August 28th to October 9th, and then that public hearing was September 23rd. If you go into the final supplemental EIS, all the written comments that were submitted are incorporated into that document, and then there's a transcript of that September 23rd public hearing. And I want to just hone in a bit on what the hearings board said. And actually, you have the full decision within the supplemental EIS, but one of the items that the hearings board talked about was a state planning goal. Under the Growth Management Act, there's 14 state planning goals, and those goals are intended to guide the development and adoption of comprehensive plans and development regulations. And some of the housing, or some of those state planning goals are economic development, housing, transportation, And one of those particular state planning goals is Goal 10. And the hearings board, in its decision, specifically called that out. And it said the adoption of the ordinances, and these are the comprehensive plan amendment ordinance and the rezone ordinance of the city, was not guided by and substantially interferes with fulfillment of GMA Planning Goal 10 for protection of the environment. So, Growth Management Act, Goal 10, protect the environment and enhance the state's high quality of life, including air and water quality and the availability of water. It's a broad goal, pertains to the protection of the environment, and a finding or conclusion of the hearings board was that the environmental impact statement, the September 27, 2013 environmental impact statement, did not do an adequate job of addressing these particular items as they relate to the proposals. And so now, I just want to focus on the criteria or the decisional criteria. If you look at the Planning Commission recommendation, it addresses a series of criteria, and actually there's a City Council resolution passed in 2012 that basically says it pertains to our growth management procedures for comprehensive plan amendments. It says each plan amendment shall meet the following criteria to be recommended for approval. And so if you go into the Planning Commission recommendation, it itemizes each one of these criteria and it has the Planning Commission's response. And it goes on a little further also, because in addition to those four criteria on that prior slide, any proposed amendment must meet the following additional criteria unless compelling reasons justify its adoption without them. And so there's five more criteria, and if you look at the Planning Commission findings and conclusions, it itemizes each one of these criteria and addresses them. And you have the Planning Commission findings and conclusions, so I'm just summarizing very briefly some of the key items or concerns that the Planning Commission cited for its recommendation of denial. And you've heard these tonight. Safety, potential landslide hazard, hillside impacts still need to be addressed. Uncertainty over environmental impacts over a variety of different items, the flood elevations, survey data, again the hillside, and changing circumstance and need, the Planning Commission felt or found that there was not enough information provided by the applicant as to why the comprehensive plan amendment was needed at this point in time. And I'm not going to read this, because this, I know this violates some rule about how many words to put on a PowerPoint. This is actually just from the agenda bill, and it's what staff is looking for from the City Council tonight. And one scenario is a denial, and one scenario is an approval, but basically what we'd be looking for is direction direction to prepare the appropriate documents to either support a denial or a approval of the comprehensive plan amendment and the rezone to be brought back in both cases to the council on November 17th, and then direction from the council to direct staff to prepare the necessary findings to support whichever direction on denial or approval is given by this city council. So, key item, again, there's an environmental impact statement, supplemental environmental impact statement that's been prepared. It's intended to inform you as a city council of the environmental impacts of these two proposals. It is basically an environmental disclosure document, and you would be using that to basically guide your decision making on whether the comprehensive plan amendment and the rezone should or should not be approved. And so it's an informational document that helps you in terms of making the policy decision on whether or not the plan map should be amended and the zoning map should be amended. So I'll be happy to answer any questions, and I think when you get to the point of actually getting to the criteria, I'll leave these PowerPoint slides up, because I think it's important that you discuss the criteria as it relates to the direction that the City Council wants to give staff.
Thank you very much. Councilmember Guerin.
Thanks. Dave, really appreciate the work. I'm going to say thanks to the Planning Commission as well. A lot of work on this and a lot of time. And also want to say thanks to all the folks that put together the SEIS city staff and of all of our experts. Amazing job, a document like I don't think any of us has ever seen a document like that before. And I, you know, just based on a comment was made, I just want to Mr. Karpak, Mr. Brainerd, and Mr. Erdman have no financial interest whatsoever in whether or not this goes forward, and that should be stated on the record. I think that was incorrectly stated before. These people are simply here with bringing their expertise, doing their work. To somehow suggest they have financial interest is not only inaccurate, but just flat out wrong. So I do appreciate the expertise that you bring from that. I know it can be difficult to talk to people who aren't experts, which is all of us, with all of your expertise, and try and explain things that you get and try and help us explain those. So from that standpoint, I want to say thanks for all the work that you've done. And before we move on, just a reminder of this has been going on since I started, and the scope of this, really, as I understand it, this time through is addressing the stuff. The SEIS is to address the stuff that the Growth Management Board had an issue with. The Growth Management Board didn't have an issue with some of the stuff that the Planning Commission included in their findings and recommendations, and so I did find it interesting that some of that was in there. But I also am glad that much of what they addressed, if not all of it, was addressed by our experts, was addressed by PACE, in their letter on the 27th that we had 2 weeks ago, and the letter that we have tonight. I also want to say thanks for getting a copy of the FEIS last week. I hand-delivered to the House, so I had a week to look at it, which was great. And also getting the Planning Commission recommendations, had 8 or 9 days to look at those as well. So I appreciate having the time, that we've had the time before tonight to be able to look at these and go over them and do that. Ultimately, we already made a decision in 2013. I know it was invalidated. But what we decided a year ago, as was already previously stated, was to come into compliance. And I believe that was already read into the record earlier, the motion that Councilmember Hanford made a year ago. We've asked for 2 extensions already, and so here we are back here deciding again. Many of these things in the criteria have already been discussed, we already went over those, and we already... Growth Management Board didn't have an issue with most of it. I mean, we have the list of the 3 points, the impacts on stream wetlands, salmon habitat, the risks of landslide, and the flood hazards. Those are the issues that they wanted more, and a reasonable range of alternatives. And then those are environmental impacts. That has been done. And so I certainly appreciate that work that's been done. Reading through these Planning Commission recommendations, much of it looks as though they didn't have all the same information that we had, and that the FEIS answers many of these questions. I mean, many of the issues they had were landslides, flood elevation, surveying are still unanswered, but that's no longer the case. Those things are answered, and we have I found the appendices to be actually quite helpful, each of the different areas. Specifically, Mr. Erdman with the landslides, the geoengineer section, and I do appreciate that there are some folks that might be interested in having surveys done from the top of the hill, and I certainly think, as an aside from this on its own, I think getting those folks who are interested, I think the number 16, perhaps 16 folks, separate from this process, if getting them the information on how they can get that done. Certainly, if I lived up there, I'd want to have that done. That's a separate process from this in my mind. But if they're interested in that, that's a lot of people who would like to have that done. So whatever the process for them to be able to do that on their own, I think that information would be great if that information could be made available to them on how to do that. I would certainly like to see that happen for them. I don't know if we're going to go step by step through all these, but almost all of it, almost everything has been covered in the letters that we got and in the FEIS. And ultimately what we're doing and what we've said in the past and what I've said in the past is we're changing the map. We're considering whether or not to change the map color to red. That's all. That's it. It's whether or not the map turns red. Appreciate all concerns, and if there ever is a project, this is a non-project rezone, there ever is a project, they're going to have to answer all these questions, and they're going to have to meet the critical areas ordinance. All those things would have to be met, and so again, we've said that over and over again. This is nothing new. I want thanks to everybody that put together this work, the experts. All that work is excellent, and I look forward to hearing what other council members have to say. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you. Quite a few comments, so bear with me. I, like Councilmember Gearing and Pastor Minnick and the applicant, have spent the last 6 years reviewing this and having it denied or remanded or denied by the planning, by the hearing examiner, and then remanded by the Growth Management Board. So it's been a long process. So we've spent the last 6 years of staff time and resources on a non-project. Let me repeat that, it's a non-project. That being said, I'm hoping that tonight we as a council will agree with the Planning Commission's 5-2 recommendation to deny the comp plan and zoning plan amendments, so we can use that valuable time and resources on viable current projects such as Kelsey and Downtown. Like Pastor Minnick, I have some pretty simple reasons, but in my case, for denying the rezone, or for not moving forward for staff to prepare the ordinances for the amendment. The first is that really limited open space is really the best designation, land use designation, for this property. If you look at page 2 of the Planning Commission recommendation, where they talk about land use designation and limited open space, it says it's designated limited open space if it lacks the availability of public services and facilities necessary to support urban development. That's the property. It's so severely impacted by critical areas, including frequently flooded areas, steep slopes, wetlands, that development requires significant mitigation. That's the property again. And also, in addition, may provide buffers between development and urban separators between transitional land uses on the urban growth boundaries of the city. Limited open space meets that, is the best designation for that land. And it also fits our current comp plan. If you look at the Blair letter, and it's page 9 of the Blair letter, they talk about what the existing comp plan land use element for land use element number 13, and it talks about the property. This undeveloped agricultural area is located between the intersection of Rimont Ridge and the U.S. and extends along U.S. 2 as the city's easternmost boundary. The area was enhanced some years ago primarily as a means of protecting the city's scenic gateway from the east along U.S. 2 and to prevent the proliferation of strip commercial. And if you saw that map that Dave put up earlier, it's surrounded by residential and limited open space, and I'll come back to that later. But this area also lacks public facilities and services to facilitate urban-level development, including sewer, water, and safe traffic access. And they asked the question in that letter, what's changed? The land is still the same location with the same critical area, safety, and traffic issues. Also, it doesn't fit the other criteria as the Planning Commission outlined in resolution number 2012, number 20, and that's number 6 and 9. And on that, number 6, on page 6, talks about, is it compatible with neighboring land uses and surrounding neighborhoods? It's not. You look at that again, it is not. It's next to limited open space and residential. Putting commercial right there smack dab does not make sense. And then on page 9, it talks about, and I completely agree with the Planning Commission on this one, doesn't address needs or changing circumstances of the city as a whole or resolve inconsistencies between the Monroe Comprehensive Plan and other city plans or ordinances. Changing circumstances of the city have not been addressed. There has been insufficient information provided by the applicant as to why the proposed comprehensive plan amendment and zoning map amendment is needed. Why is it needed? And why the proposed amendment is being requested? A strong need for the proposed plan amendment has not been demonstrated by the applicant. A project-specific application would have been more helpful in determining needs and would also make the request easier to evaluate. My second reason, I really have to question the reliability and accuracy of some of the data supplied by PACE and the consultants and the FFEIS. First off, I know Councilmember Guerin brought this up about the consultants not having a financial interest, but PACE does. They have a financial interest in seeing that this property change from limited open space to general commercial. They are not simply supplying objective data to council for us to make an informed decision, but rather are representing their clients, as they should. First Heritage Baptist Church. And their sole purpose is to get the amendments approved and use that data, the data that they have pulled together to that end, is to get these amendments approved. I know Pastor Minnick wants us to go through with the vote that happened in December, but we have to base it on this final supplemental EIS. So whatever we voted back then does not necessarily say that we have to go through with it now. We have to base it on the data that we have looked at over the last few months. And the consultants have also overwhelmed us with data, but I do find discrepancies in that. Pictures of the flooding vary. You get a picture where it's completely flooded, pictures from the consultants where there's limited water. They brought up the slope, and in some of their comments a couple weeks ago, they talked about the slope as significant, that the grade was greater than 40%, and that would lead to a greater potential of landslides. And then we saw pictures of recent landslides, but they don't see this as a problem. And then the watershed consultant talks of the FIS data, which FEMA uses, but states that the data has technical errors, so we should not trust that their analysis is more accurate, even though FEMA will not automatically accept the revised analysis. But we should in making this decision. Also, I find that the data doesn't take into account that we had a drought this last year, and what about possible climate changes in the next year? My last reason, and final reason, is I believe the changes proposed constitute spot zoning. I find the Blair letter compelling. It would not be compatible with the surrounding development, and it benefits a single owner. Certainly doesn't benefit any of the neighbors on the ridge or any of the neighboring farms, as evidenced by the outpouring of opponents to this project. And I would like to end by saying this. In my opinion, it is not a property rights issue, which I have heard a few council members state the main reason that they are in favor of this amendment, or these amendments. If we, the city, was proposing to change the land designation from general commercial to limited open space, that would indeed be a property rights issue. That is not the case here. We have given this applicant their due process. They have had numerous days in court, starting with city staff drafting the first phase EIS, if you were here and remember that, which was denied, and that was on the city's dime, holding a special meeting in December 2013, I think on December 26th, even though it was not an emergency situation, to approve the amendments, defending it to the Growth Management Board on the city's dime again, which was remanded back, basically denied. Our city has done more for this applicant than any other I have seen in my 6 years serving the city. And I have to question that. If the applicant were a marijuana business or an adult entertainment company, would we be here today? Would we be defending their property rights? I think not. For these reasons, I'm urging my fellow council members to not approve the two amendments. Thank you.
The time right now is 9:58. Per our rules, if we're going to extend past 10, we'll need a motion to extend past 10. Councilmember Gehring?
Two things, but first I'll make the motion to extend the meeting past 10 o'clock.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Gehring. I have a second from Councilmember Camp. Any discussion on the motion to extend past 10? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Councilmember Gehring, you have the floor.
Thanks. Councilmember Kedlec, I appreciate your comments. And many of those have been brought up before in the past and have been addressed and have been found to be not a reason not to move forward. Specifically, the spot zoning argument, many of those things before have been moved past because they simply, and also having been reviewed in the past, were not denied for any of those reasons. And to the financial interest standpoint, it's a common arrangement to secure payment for work done for PACE to be in a drainage area about this. That's well known. We talked about that a year ago. It's not really, I'm going to say it's an inaccurate description to describe that as some sort of an inappropriate thing when it's a very common business practice across the board. We discussed that over a year ago. That kind of sheds a bad light unnecessarily when there isn't any bad light to shed with regard to that arrangement. So I want to kind of take some of those things off the table. Let's see, number one, landslide activity on the hillside was identified, was identified in the draft SEIS, but landslide hazard impacts raises public safety issues. That was in the 32I from the Planning Commission. That was addressed tonight in the letter that we got from PACE, and it's also in the final FEIS for why the landslide hazard impacts if you're just building on the 11 acres and you uphold the critical areas ordinance, there's not an issue there. That's what our experts have told us, and that takes care of the concern that the Planning Commission had with number two. Number one. Number two says that the recommend approval, again, it's about the landslide hazard sources of water survey data and flood elevations. It's addressed tonight by PACE, and it's also in the FEIS and the final FEIS, which the Planning Commission didn't have access to. Number three, 14 planning goals, protect the environment. That's the issue that we're addressing, which is what was remanded back to us, which is the scope of what we're talking about, which is the impacts on streams, wetlands, sand and habitat, risks of landslide, flood hazards, running utilities out there, transportation, things like that, something a developer, if there ever is one, will have to deal with. That's not what's on the table, but that's not why we're doing an FEIS. We're doing an FEIS to deal with the environmental issues, which Planning Director Osaki mentioned earlier. This information is now available, and it's unfortunate the Planning Commission didn't have access to some of this information that we have, but it certainly makes it easier to go through their list. And that's number three. Number four, cumulative effects of others. Is this one? Oh, public participation. There has been more than enough. Everybody who has ever wanted to weigh in has been able to weigh in on this. So any sort of insinuation that the public hasn't, there hasn't been public process in this for the last 6+ years, and that's just not accurate. 33I, changing general commercial zoning does not seem appropriate for the property. That's not really a question for the Planning Commission, and quite frankly, that's what the property owners are asking for. They're asking for general commercial zoning to be done, turning the property red so that they can have a chance to do something with it. It is a property rights issue because they want to try and do something. It's up to us to whether or not we're going to decide to let them do it. We need to deal with more environmental issues, as the Earth Management Board has asked, and now we have a big thick binder in relation to that to go back to them with. Turning the map red is the only thing that this has been about. Whether or not it's appropriate for the property, the market will decide that, not the Planning Commission and not the City Council for that matter. The general market will decide whether or not a business ever wants to move there, assuming that it gets turned red. Let's see, number 33, number two, opportunities to do so, finding the criteria cannot be met absent additional information. Again, for this one, we have the additional information now. We have the final EIS that they didn't have. Number three, it actually says this is consistent with land use and growth projections, which does make sense. Number four is questions raised during the course of testimony are unanswered at this time. Again, surrounding residential land uses and neighborhoods. We would never access this property from the top of the hill. If you look at the map, there are houses within the same distance from the Goodwill, Mountain Ridge Road to Goodwill. It might actually be even a shorter distance. If we're talking about houses that are near commercial developments, there's almost nowhere in town where you see a commercial development that there aren't houses within 1,000 feet. So from that aspect, it's something you'd access from the road down below Highway 2 or from an extended road elsewhere. And then number five, until certain environmental questions are answered, was there concern there? Again, it's been answered in the final FEIS. It's been answered by the experts, and it's been answered in these the addendums that we, the emails that we received from PACE in response to these findings. So, I mean, these are items that are checked off the list. And I understand the Planning Commission didn't have the information, so I would have concerns about these as well. But now that we have the information, you're going through each one of these, and you see that it is covered. We have the expert data. And quite frankly, I'd be also interested in seeing, we have Planning Commission findings and recommendations from 2013, as well as findings and recommendations that we did when this was approved at the end of 2013 as well. Those still hold true. There'd be no reason that we would have anything different from those. It's just that we have an additional FEIS now. To add to that, the areas that they said were lacking, we have a very thick binder full of information of that now. So from that standpoint, if you're going to go through each one of these, we have checked off of the list of issues that they have. One by one, each one of these is addressed. Again, the scope of this is the environmental stuff. That's what the Growth Management Hearing Board had an issue with. Not transportation, not utilities, not things like that. That's not an issue with. They had an issue with environment. We have that now. And it's my job to look at that, the stuff that is actually on the table to be discussed, which is this stuff. I have a hard time hearing these people are experts. They don't have financial interests. This is what they do for a living. They have excellent reputations, and I don't know that any of us are qualified to doubt what they've done. I understand people do, but from a qualification standpoint, I just don't see how that can be done. Anyway, I don't know if anybody else has any comments. I'll leave it at that.
Okay, are there any other comments, Council? Okay. Seeing none, is there Councilmember Rasmussen?
Thank you. Definitely appreciate all the comments tonight. When Pace was here last time, I forget how far we are on this. The piece that really struck out to me that I found new was the whole landslide issue, and they kind of made it seem not as urgent. I mean, gave it a rating of 40%, as stated, and that's what I heard as well. To me, that's still pretty big. And you take away the science of it and put in common sense, and the reality is there's current evidence of landslides, and you scratch on a wall, eventually you're going to have a hole. So, I mean, if landslides are going to continue, I mean, it's no longer a shallow slide, in my opinion, and that's 40%, that's really how I interpret it. Science, no. Expert, no. But common sense, yes. So that was the biggest, most alarming thing that I heard and I saw. And it bothers me that there's still unanswered questions on that, which the Planning Commission, I cherish that sentiment as well. Granted, as you said, Councilmember Gehring, you may not have the same information as we did, but we don't know if they would make a different decision if they did. So, we can't really use that argument. Aside from that, it to give us serious consideration to change what it is. I mean, I want to know what we're changing it to, for what reasons. I mean, I know we're changing the general commercial, but why? Tell me why. And let's look at that. So I'm not going to repeat a lot of the other stuff I've already said in the past, or it's been repeated, but really it's I'm still not in favor of it, and with the landslide information that's come up on this, regardless of how you look at it, to me, how I look at it, raises a lot more concerns than certainly what I had before. So
thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you, Mayor. So, we've been talking about this for the last 4 years I've been on council. And I don't want to rehash so much of what we've already said. I did want to address one comment that was made earlier, that there were promises made last year to follow through with this, and there were never any promises made at all. We voted a year ago to answer the questions that the Growth Management Hearing Board had. The FS EIS has been done. The questions have been covered. In my mind, I've read. I appreciated the huge binder getting delivered. Although, Dan, I'm going to probably ask for a discount on my utilities because my door was left open and so my heat was heating the house all night long. That was a joke on the record. So I've had so much time to read all this. We've talked about this. I've read all of the comments. I've read all the comments from that the Planning Commission addressed. I've read all the comments that took place during the public hearings. I've read PACE's comments to everything. In my mind, this is clear. Obviously, there's different opinions. But in my mind, this is clear that they have done what the council asked for a year ago. They've answered the questions that the Growth Management Hearing Board put forth. So in my mind, there's no reason to not follow through with this. I'm satisfied. Are you looking for a motion?
Or? Yeah, direction one way or the other. Yep.
Yep. You have the floor.
So I'll move to direct staff to prepare an ordinance approving the East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Map Amendment and an ordinance approving the East Monroe Zoning Map Amendment to be brought back for consideration at the City Council's November 17th, 2015 meeting, and to prepare the necessary City Council findings and conclusions to accompany the ordinances in support of approving the Comprehensive Plan Map Amendment and Zoning Map Amendment.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford. I have a second from Councilmember Gehring. Any discussion on the motion? Councilmember Hanford?
Just wanted to put forth if there's a need for a public hearing to be held before on that date or before final action is taken. I would suggest that we have, if there's a need for one, then we have one on the 17th.
I would agree with that as well.
Okay, so shall we take the first motion, and then if council would like to hold a public hearing, we can do a motion following the first motion that's on the floor?
Sure.
Okay. Anything further? You still have the floor?
No.
Okay, Councilmember Cutterback.
Will not be voting for the motion, although I appreciate different points of view. And just a couple comments I forgot to mention from a couple of the people who stood up and talked. Ms. Blair's comments of the range of developments and scenarios, I think, was very compelling. And also her comments about the compensatory storage issue. So those were a couple all other reasons why I'm not voting. I don't think those were addressed. Thank you.
Okay, anything further? Seeing nothing else for discussion on the motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes 4-2. Councilmember Hanford?
I move to hold public hearing on November 17th.
Second.
Prior to the first reading
of this ordinance?
Of this ordinance.
Second.
Okay. I have a motion to hold a public hearing on the proposed ordinance on November 17th.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a second from Councilmember Gehring. Discussion on the motion. Councilmember Cutterback.
Yeah, I'll be voting for the motion, but just because there's not the time, the 15 days, what do we plan to do as a city to get the word out that we're having a public hearing?
So I'll turn to staff.
Off the top of my head right now, we have a huge interested party email list.
Okay.
So at a minimum, Thursday, because tomorrow's a holiday, we'll do an email blast out there to everybody. We'll do the posting in the public places that we normally would do, and then we'll go ahead and run a legal ad in the Tribune, because we won't have time, we won't get it in the paper in time for the monitor.
Right.
So we'll do it in the Tribune.
We come out on Wednesdays. Herald.
Herald.
You mean the Herald? Herald. I'm sorry.
The Everett Herald.
All paper. So at a minimum, newspaper posting, and I think probably the most effective is going to be the email, because we've got a pretty comprehensive list. And then we'll try to do a mailing out to property owners in the nearby area, many of whom would already be on the email list, but
right,
we'll do that as well.
And our Facebook page, or I'm just looking for other ways to get the word out. I think it's important because we don't have that 15-day notice, that we do as much as we possibly can to get the word out.
Okay. We'll use all those methods to notice the meeting.
Thank you.
Yep. So we have a motion on the table for the public hearing. We had a second discussion. Seeing no other discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. All right. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is under final action. This is AB 15-198. Authorized Mayor Pro Tem to sign the interlocal agreement with Snohomish County for emergency management services. And I ask that the city clerk note my recusal in the official minutes for this meeting for this item. The reason for my recusal is that I am employed by the contracting party, Snohomish County. My position with the county is that of an employee, and my compensation consists of a fixed salary. There is no contingent component of my compensation package pursuant to RCW 4223040, and based upon my consultation with the city attorney, I accordingly have at most a remote interest in the agreement and am removing myself from chambers for the vote. So,
Mayor Pro Tem.
Don't throw it.
Yeah, please.
You moved on me. I'm just going to hand it over to
Okay, let the record show that the mayor has left the chambers. It's 10:18. So, Agenda Bill 15-198, authorized Mayor Pro Tem to sign interlocal agreement with Snohomish County for emergency management services. Brad, this is you.
You want to say something?
No, I was going to make a motion, but if you
go
talk about it first,
you want to talk about it.
You just want to talk about it.
You don't want to talk about it, you want to make a motion, that's fine.
Councilmember Gain.
I move to authorize the Mayor Pro Tem to sign the interlocal agreement with Snohomish County for emergency management services and expressly authorize further minor revisions as deemed necessary or appropriate.
Second.
All about it.
Let the record show the motion was approved by Councilmember Gain and seconded by Councilmember Cutterback. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 6-0.
All right, thank you. We're now on to council member reports. Council member Gehring.
Thanks. First of all, I'm going to say congratulations to everybody who was either reelected or elected. Councilmember Camp Davis Gamble and Mr. Scarborough was here earlier. Saw him earlier as well. And I'll keep the seat warm, leave some brownies here or something for him in December. So when he's here as well. So also, just do need to note that the Kansas City Royals won the World Series. I'm very excited. And after 30 years, I just need to toot the horn a little bit about that. That was very exciting. This Thursday, the undefeated Monroe Varsity Girls Volleyball Team will be playing state in the Tri-Cities, state tournament over in the Tri-Cities. Just an unbelievable season for the ladies. It's just been a pleasure to watch. So much fun. So great for the community and so many student athletes who have worked so hard. And it's just so great to see the hard work paid off, hard work rewarded, and hopefully they go a long way and bring home some hardware. Regardless, it's been an amazing season, so my wife and daughter will be going over to watch, and so I'm glad that at least someone in my family gets to go watch that as well, so wish them well. We also have a cross-country runner from Mineral High School who placed in the top 50 at state, and so her name is Emily Donnelly, and she gets to then go on to the border battle, so the best runners in Washington versus the best runners in Oregon. At the 5K level, and she gets to participate in that. The first ever Monroe runner to be able to do that, my understanding. So I want to say that's my understanding. It could have been someone a long time ago, but as far as I know, she's the first. So that's awesome. Her name is Emily Donnelly. We say congratulations to her. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilmember Davis.
My congratulations also to those that were elected or re-elected. I look forward to working with a new council member. That's about all I have.
He's a lot taller than me.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
I told you brownies. I want to echo that sentiment. It was a long season, but it was fun. And it was just enlightening. It's really always a great opportunity to go out and meet people and find out what they're thinking. And that's about it for me.
Yeah, thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. First of all, tomorrow being Veterans Day, a big shout out to all our veterans out there kind of serving our kids, sir. Certainly, we wouldn't be here without it, so big thank you for that. Last Thursday, did attend the Monroe Business Symposium.
There's something for
awesome. Great event for the first one. Some excellent speakers. Of course, it was presented by one of our local banks, and so it kind of took me back to my old banking days, and it's kind of nice knowing exactly what they're talking about. But great insight and good information that came out of that, and I'm very hopeful that Kitty comes back another day to tell us that when the next one is. So certainly encourage anyone to go to it. Tonight, I just have to say, so for the last several weeks, I've been working with a group of youth here in Monroe, and it's part of a bigger project for Snohomish County and making Snohomish County a healthier place to live, work, and play. And I sat in on a focus group of a group of teens tonight and kind of listened to them, what their opinions of Monroe and is it healthy and what they think about health and what, you know, it means and so forth. And it was very insightful to hear from this group of teens. And it kind of struck a chord on a few occasions, especially when they were asked, do you live in a healthy community? And these group of teens only knew of Sky River Park and Lake Tai Park. And, you know, being a former Parks Board member, I love our parks, and I think we've got some of the greatest parks. But, you know, obviously there's some work to do there. You know, and they talked about litter and garbage all over and, too much pavement, parking lots and so forth. So it was very, very cool to sit there and listen to their perspective and their insight. And I'm hopeful that as this initiative progresses, that we can invite them to, or at least a few of them, to come and speak to council. And so for us to hear their opinions on what Monroe is really like in their eyes. So.
Thank you. Councilmember Kotovac.
I haven't met for a couple of weeks, so I have attended a few events. Obviously, our Y Fall Classic run had about almost 500 people registered. So, and we moved it downtown to really showcase downtown. So this was the first year without the curbs, and I have to tell you, it was wonderful to hold an event down there with no curbs and just a plaza-like feel. So definitely a big plus. And that showcase downtown, I think, was good for the downtown area. Last Thursday, I attended a luncheon at Dawson that was for Dawson Place, which is a collaboration between the prosecutor, police,
child advocates and a place where a child who has suffered from abuse can go, and it's a wraparound services. So it was a great organization, great luncheon to learn a lot. They packed the Comcast Arena, so it was very well supported. And then on Saturday night, I attended our Rotary auction and barn dance at the fairgrounds, and it was the biggest one since, and Rotary raises money for all the nonprofits in town. It does great service. So there were over 300 people there and raised, well, I guess we'll probably find out tomorrow how much was raised, but supports Take the Next Step, AmeriCaLEAD, the Y, the Boys and Girls Club, everywhere. So I just encourage, you know, next year it would be great to see more elected officials there. So that would be wonderful. And congratulations to people who have won. We'll be sitting with next year. It'll be a good year, I think. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Yes, I actually attended the same Dawson Place luncheon, and I saw you from across, and I kept hearing that picture. It was that large.
So. I was at the cool table.
Yeah. So, also, a couple days later, the next day, that was the previous week, on the 30th, we had the Housing Hubs open house. And I gotta give accolades to the mayor. He did a great job in his speech. There was, as Fred, the head of Housing Hope, held an umbrella over each speaker out in the rain so that everybody under the shelter could watch. He was holding the umbrella for each speaker, and because it was a downpour. And when the mayor went out there, he refused the umbrella and made the point that, well-made point, that people in our community are standing in this and living in this all the time. And it was very, very well done, and made it really hit home. And then he called myself and former councilor Tony Balk out there to thank us as well, but for our involvement. But just an excellent event. So exciting to see. I've talking with my parents. Many of you know my dad has been involved in this in the faith community for years, and he remembers years ago when the homelessness in Monroe was brought up to the faith community, and they started getting involved in how we can help with this, and they were involved. He was heavily involved with getting that going. And talking with Tony, Councilor Tony Balk. Mm-hmm. And so it was cool to see really come to fruition all the way to another generation. Mm-hmm. So it was very rewarding. Mm-hmm. Very rewarding to see that open up. So I think that's all I got.
Thank you. Staff, Ms. Worthen, Ms. Nelson.
Two things. State auditors are coming on site Tuesday the 17th, and one of the new things they're doing this year is they're requesting a half-hour inquiry session with one of the council members, and so I need a victim, I need a volunteer who would be willing to meet with them.
Which group is it? I'm sorry?
State auditors.
State auditors.
Yeah, I'm in town most days, so if it works with my schedule, I can do it. If you give me the time, I'm sorry, unless somebody else is interested in doing it.
I was going to nominate Jason.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that's right, because Jason's not here. But he doesn't work in town, though. Would it just be a during-the-day type of thing? Or
I would assume so.
Okay.
They would contact you and work out when you can be.
It's just a general... whatever.
I'm guessing.
Okay. Yeah, I'm, unless somebody else wants to do it, I'm fine doing it. Yeah.
Oh, no.
It's all yours.
It just has to be it's sometime in the next
you can report
7 weeks.
Next
week. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other thing is with the state audit, there's usually an entrance conference and an exit conference. The exit conference is important, but the entrance conference, I'd like council's input. What do you think of us requesting to cancel that because they charge us $93.50 per hour per person, and they always insist on having three people come to the meeting, and it's plus travel expenses. And all they do is read a memo to us and then say, do you have any questions about the audit?
That's
right.
So
I'm thinking it might save us some money.
Councilmember Cutabat?
Don't do it, but I have another comment.
Oh, okay. Councilmember Gary.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's not. Let's not.
So it's okay if I say council's requesting?
Yeah.
To cancel the.
Yeah, I mean, they come and they say, hey, we're doing this, and then you leave. And so there's no point in that. We want to hear the results of what they're doing.
Yeah. White paper for that.
Exactly.
Okay.
Councilmember Cutabat.
Just, I forgot to mention, it's Police and Fire Appreciation Week next week, and you mentioned your dad, Pastor Hanford, is our chair of our committee that meets to organize this, so there's going to be different things going on all week, ending in a luncheon on Friday.
That's
Friday, I think it's 5 o'clock on Friday, but there's stuff going on all week, so. And are we doing a proclamation next Tuesday?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we did one last year, and we need to put that on a reoccurring reminder on the agenda. Thank you, Councilmember Cutter.
Yes.
Okay. Anything further, Ms. Nelson?
No, that's it.
Ms. Place?
Welcome back.
Mr. Osaki?
So a couple of items. One, the school district's moving ahead fairly quickly in terms of getting its plans put together to eventually submit for the Park Place middle school redevelopment. So we have a couple of meetings there for the school district during the course of this month to talk about submittal plans and plan review process. And then second, I would be remiss, since Melissa's here, I'm going to take advantage of the fact she's here just to say that document you have, the final supplemental EIS, the amount of work that went into it is reflected in the thickness of the document, and there's a lot of staff that put a lot of time and effort into responding to comments, getting all the public notices together, posting items on the web, doing just a whole range of things that needs to be done to get that document out last week. So I just want to thank everybody in the city, and especially in my department, for getting that document out last week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Chief, and then Brad.
Well, the mayor asked me to bring this to you, this email. I apologize for the response being late on this, on the school zones. In a perfect world, I would absolutely agree with this gentleman. I think that would be the way to go. But the problem we have is that we don't have a continuous school zone, nor can we implement a school zone. The
school zone's going to be 300 feet long.
Yeah, 300 feet from the school?
From the school, with the crosswalk.
Yeah. And we have breaks in there, so we can't have it one continuous school zone. We have tried to update the signs indicating where the school zones start and end, and so that's where we're at right now.
We have a couple of lights.
I know that each of you probably got the email back in September on this.
Councilmember Camp and Councilmember Hanford. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I'm just curious. So do all of the school zones in this area, they all have the flashing lights, or is it just a couple?
No, they can have signs without the flashing lights. The only ones that have flashing lights are at Freilands, on Kelsey, and in front of Frank Wagner.
And it would be expensive to implement that? Brad?
It costs money that is not currently budgeted.
All right, that's fine.
We actually got those on.
We got them on grant.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we didn't pay for those.
Okay.
We will certainly keep an eye out for another grant or something like that.
Have you responded back to the individual with that kind of information, or?
I haven't, because.
Oh, whoever.
It wasn't sent to me.
We were researching information on it, and. Yeah, so we haven't responded yet, but we will be responding.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember, yes?
No, go ahead.
I was just going to call on Councilmember Hanford, but if you've got something, go for it.
No, I thought it was different.
Councilmember Hanford?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that
someone gets back to the citizen.
Thank you. Councilmember Guerin.
Thanks. Brad, I don't remember if we'd ever done this. Do we ever have school zone paint on the road? Where it actually says school zone on the road. I've seen that in other towns. I had thought at one point we had that here, but then we got rid of it.
Somewhere, I forget where it was, but I remember where all of us left that in the last 3 years was the L.
Right. So, something like that, and I don't know if it has to be white, or maybe there's some standards. You know, can it be yellow?
That it has to be white.
It has to be white.
Yeah.
Any additional visibility may be helpful. I know that costs money to do paint, but. The more visibility, the better, maybe. I mean, if we're talking about, I don't know when I am in one or not in one. Something to think about, maybe, but I always see those. School zone.
I think what people are not clear on is when the school zone ends. Like, if you're going on Main Street, you've got a school zone start, and then the end of the school zone is really where you go, where the 25-mile-an-hour sign is.
Well, yeah, you don't have a sign that says you are now leaving the school zone.
But I feel like I've seen a sign before where it said end school zone in some jurisdictions.
It is an optional sign. It's not required by the manual uniform traffic control devices, but it is an optional sign.
Yeah, so that would be one thing that could be considered is you have the school zone begin, but just school zone sign, and then have end school zone, and then just a few hundred feet from that, start school zone and then end school zone. It's just that we've got a bunch of schools on here, and they're not close enough together to make it one contiguous school zone. So, and this email came in at the same time that we. Had some other things going on with the Muni Court, so that it required some research. But
are signs cheaper than paint?
Yes, maintained. Yeah. Okay. Anything further, Chief?
The only thing is, if you read your Everett Herald, you'll notice that a former member of school board. Was convicted of 2 felonies.
Thank you. Mr. Feilberg.
I do not have anything to say.
Okay, thank you. For me, I've got my, it's late, so I'm not going to get into high detail. Monroe this week's got a good summary of everything that went on this last week. And Gene.
I sent council an email in regards to a traffic engineer that's got issues with our requirement for a level of service study. Those conversations continue. So this is probably week 4. It's a requirement. Everybody knows that that intersection of Blueberry Lane and Kelsey is problematic. So I have reached out to Master Builders on more than one occasion. They're supportive of what we're doing. Our rules haven't changed in 15 years. And this person just disagrees wholeheartedly. So I got 2 more emails today. I responded to 1 of the 2, but continues to ask the same questions and just have lots of allegations. So it gets to your level, that's where it's at. Draft agenda,
Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
One quick comment. Yeah. I just want to commend the city on city staff on responding to the reflective tape issue on the posts when I saw it on Facebook. And I saw it. I saw a response in my email, and I saw a response on Facebook. I'm really impressed. You guys did a great job.
Good.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you. We try and do good.
You do.
You do good.
Okay, so 6:30 special business meeting next week.
Yeah, Transportation Benefit District.
Can we get a confirmation that we have people that are going to be able to make a 6:30 meeting for the Transportation Benefit District?
Yes.
Who cannot make it?
That's next week.
Yes. Okay.
Half hour early.
All right, so we will have a quorum at 6:30 then for the Transportation Benefit District.
Okay. I'll make it clear, it's all about the budget for the Transportation Benefit District of 2016. Okay. Draft agenda for November 17th, the regular scheduled council meeting. We have actually 2 public hearings now, one regarding the 2016 budget, and the second will be on the Eastman Run. The consent agenda, under unfinished business, we have the 2015 comprehensive plan update. We're discussing the solid waste contract, and And I believe Diane sent information out in the last couple days on that. Please let us know if you have questions. And then ordinance is for East Monroe. Under new business, we have lobby firm selection. I think I got everybody's grading sheets. If I didn't, I'd like to get the last one before you go. There's one and two. And then ordinance is amending the utility rate structure. Ordinance amending transportation impact fees.
Okay. Before we, and we'll have a proclamation in there also for police and fire week. Are there any, so just some for council to consider. We had about 16 people here this evening for something that was not advertised as a public hearing. If they had gone 5 minutes each, that would have been 80 minutes of testimony. We have a public hearing that is being scheduled for next week. Are there any items on here that council and or that staff would be okay with moving to either the 24th of November or December 1st? Because we could end up
do parking regulations. Do we need to do
parking? I would suggest solid waste. I don't know if there's anything keeping us from pushing that out a week or two, Dan.
Okay. And Councilmember,
I said the two ordinances can go to the 24th as long as they just have to be adopted by the 1st.
By December 1st.
First, yeah.
Okay. So, with that said, Council, do you want to not cancel the meeting on the 24th of November?
Well, so far we would just have these utility rates and transportation impact fees.
And the amend parking regulations.
Also the last three items.
Mm-hmm.
24th?
It's not me, but... Thanks for a quick name.
Is everybody okay with the 24th?
Yeah.
Yeah. Councilmember Hanford.
Everybody okay with November?
Huh? Second reading.
Yeah, second reading.
Wouldn't be on the 24th.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and we'll move those items to the 24th. And we'll keep the lobby firm selection on for next week, but in the event that things go long, that's something that doesn't have a time frame, an immediate time frame with it. You can move that to the 24th also if you want to. I don't know if there's... And the select the Board of Health representative might be able to move too. So we'll go ahead and we'll take a look at that then. We have direction.
I'm going to go ahead and slide the lobby firm to the 24th because okay. I don't think we'll get it done otherwise.
Okay. All right. Any objection to those changes? Councilmember Hanford?
Yeah, just the question. What were you saying about moving the lobbying firm now?
Move that to the 24th.
Because
somebody's got to be able to take the data we collected tonight, put it in an Excel spreadsheet, and none of us are going to be here for the rest of the week. I'll come in just to deal with the week's arc stuff. But
okay,
that's good enough.
Is somebody calling references, or did you already do that?
We will.
You still have to do that too, so that has
makes
to
sense.
Fit in.
Yeah.
So those will probably be the early part of next week then. All right, anything further? Okay, there being no other businesses this evening, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
I have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Guerin. I have a second from Councilmember Cutaback. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you, have a great evening.
We're adjourned.